Finance Committee back to order. We have four bills on the agenda tonight.
Oh, seven.
Seven, where are the other two? Seven bills on the agenda. Not our controversial. We're going to start tonight with Senator Marty, you have two bills. Which one
yes,
would you like to?
Let's start with, Mr. Chair, let's start with Senate File 887.
Okay, this is a Radon Awareness Act. Senator Marty, 887, you may proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the Department of Health omnibus policy bill. There's, I believe, one section that relates to this department and that to this committee, and that's actually the radon awareness provision, which in the bill is Section 3. The department wanted to increase the disclosure related to radon in real estate transactions and came in with the legislation in the bill. And the realtors had concerns about it, and the two have been meeting together for the last several weeks, and both sides were very helpful to each other, and they came up with the A9 amendment, which would address the concerns. There is one other provision in the amendment, the last few lines, the deletion of several sections is not related to that issue. It was a technical amendment that was asked for by athletic trainers. House has taken it out, however, and so to conform with that, we would choose to take that out, too. It's a technical thing we're deleting from the bill. But the main portion of it is this Section 3 in the 89 amendment, which would be replacing Section 3 in the bill, and would make it so the radon awareness information fits onto the realtor's current forms. And I have Matthew Colley from the Department of Health here, and Paul Eager from Realtors is here as well, and they'd be glad to speak to it and I'm sure answer questions and whatever you want.
Senator Marty, we're going to hear from him. Hopefully it's been worked out, but we'll find out if it has been. And Mr. who wants to speak? Mr. Eager.
Mr. Chairman, Paul Eager with the Minnesota Association of Realtors. After the bill was introduced, we got in touch with both Senator Marty and the Department of Health and scheduled a time where we could sit down and learn about what the health department was proposing. I think Senator Marty said weeks. I think it's more accurate to say maybe over the last week. It feels like weeks, but we've been discussing the approach, and I think the approach the health department had laid out was very prescriptive and would have called for a statutory form laid out, as you can see in the language is introduced. We approached Department of Health and asked if we could try to simplify the language to some degree that, as Senator Marty mentioned, we could try to accommodate this in our existing seller disclosure form. I think what I would say about the language is this is a better, much better approach from our perspective and something I think we can work with.
Sir, would you like to visit?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Matthew Colley. I'm the Legislative Policy Director for the Minnesota Department of Health. I think what Senator Marty and Mr. Eager has stated is accurate. At the department, we are very happy that the realtors brought the ideas that they did and that we were able to make the provision simpler, achieving the goals of increasing radon awareness in the state, since it is a large problem in the state, and if the realtors are good with it, then I think we're good with it as well.
Let me just say it. I'm glad people are working together. It's always the way I like to see things done. Senator Kosoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty, in this bill, if they have not done a radon test, are they required to do that?
No, Mr. Chairman, this is simply that you have to disclose. It fits in very well with the existing real estate disclosure things where you have to talk about known hazards. In this case, they'd have to say, we've never tested, we don't know, or if we've tested, here's what the results were, if they know, and if they've done any mitigation. In other words, it fits in well with the way we have other disclosures. You don't have to go out and find things and test on your property, but if you know something, the buyer should beware.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, so that at this point, with this language, there's not opposition to the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, you know, we don't oppose the bill. You know, we did believe that our existing material fact disclosure law was probably adequate to cover these situations, but we were able to work with Health and with Senator Marty, and with this language, we're not opposing the bill.
It has to, it's at one more stop, I believe, Judiciary Committee.
Mr. Chair, it has to go back to Judiciary.
Back? It was there already?
Don't ask.
I don't want to know that. Senator Dahl, what was the A9 amendment? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Anybody wish to speak for or against the Senate file 887? See none. Senator Pappas moves that Senate file 887 as amended be recommended to pass and forwarded to the Judiciary Committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, 2-1. I don't want whatever. Okay, Senator Marty, do you have Senate File 1166? Senator Marty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And I will have an amendment to this that I'll speak to is explaining the bill. This is a bill that would ban certain uses, certain products, consumer products containing triclosan, which is an antibacterial. I think people have seen a lot of it in soft soap types of products. Many of the manufacturers are beginning to move away from it. It was patented in 1964. I think it was first introduced into the market in the early 70s. Been put in many personal care products, soaps, body washes, and so on. About 96% of the triclosan used goes down the drain, and in Minnesota, goes down the drain. It's the products that come out of it when it's done in wastewater treatment systems with chlorine breaks down into certain types of toxins and certain types of dioxins. We had testimony last night in the Environment Committee from two U of M researchers who were funded with a LCCMR grant. They found growing levels of those types of dioxins in like pepin and so on, whereas in the past 30 years we've been declining some of the other sources of dioxin in the past. FDA has said that the consumer use of triclosan soaps and so on provides no benefit over plain soap and water. American Medical Association and Minnesota Department of Health recommend against. They say, just use regular soaps and so on instead of that. There are many of alternative products available on the market that work equally well and don't pollute the rivers of the state. Triclosan is an endocrine hormone disruptor. It does have risk to it. It's a pesticide, registered pesticide. And we've been trying to work with it, given the importance of it to our lakes and rivers, to the economy of Minnesota. We believe it's time to step forward with this. The governor last week announced that they were moving forward with the state ban on the purchase of it. A lot of manufacturers that once produced it or once used it in their products are no longer using it. And I'm going to ask Trevor Russell, from the Watershed Program Director from Friends of the Mississippi, come up here to speak to the bill. And then I have one more comment about amendment and so on before we I'm happy to take questions at any point. But and I know there I have an amendment. He's setting up his products. Ecolab, we've had several conversations with them, and I told them last night before our hearing I was willing to add into it. The bill right now has an exemption for products that are used solely in medical facilities. And they had asked, we also do it in food preparation facilities, because whether it's commercial food businesses, whether it's food packaging plants or restaurant types of things. I'd rather not overreach in the legislation, and if there's any possible advantage of using it there, exempt that. And so I will have an amendment, and I don't know if it's been passed.
Is that the A1 amendment?
A1 amendment. That's the language that they had suggested, and I would also like to, and you could add it to that amendment. Chamber talked about, and I think that it's a legitimate concern, we had put an effective date of January of next year, recognizing stocks in store shelves and so on. You don't want to have people be sending it back to the manufacturer. We're not trying to cheat like a crisis. We're just trying to move it forward. And I was going to suggest an effective date of next July 1st, 2014, so we have more than a year to clear out shelves and so on based on that. So I would encourage that you add change January to July 12 with the bill when you amend the bill, when you vote on the amendment. But I'll invite...
We'll do that at the appropriate time.
Sure.
We'll change that date. Mr.
Russell, if you're ready for that, he's ready.
We're ready, sir.
Mr. Chair, Senators, my name is Trevor Russell. I am the Watershed Program Director with Friends of the Mississippi River. We're a St. Paul-based nonprofit organization. We work to clean up water in the state of Minnesota. I'm going to begin tonight with some notes on dioxin, since I know you may not all be familiar with it, and then talk about the environmental and human health impacts of these products and some product effectiveness information. The term dioxin is commonly used to refer to a family of toxic chemicals that all share a similar structure and common mechanism of toxic action. Dioxins are persistent carcinogens and are known to bioaccumulate or build up in the ecosystem and our bodies over time. There are lots of dioxins, well over 200 different kinds of dioxins. Some are pretty well known. 2378 TCDD, you may know by its presence in Agent Orange. Other dioxins are in the PCB family, a well-known family of dioxins that were produced commercially in large quantities until production was phased out in 1977. Since the 70s, dioxin levels have been decreasing in the U.S., though current exposure levels remain a concern. All that is from the U.S. EPA. Dioxins are an especially potent toxin, and I quote from the EPA, even in low parts per trillion, background exposure is likely to result in an increased risk of cancer and is uncomfortably close to levels that can cause adverse non-cancer effects in humans and animals. There's no such thing as a good dioxin. We're here because 58% of U.S. streams contain triclosan, including Duluth Harbor, Lake St. Croix, Lake Winona, Mississippi River. And triclosan, a common antibacterial agent used in a variety of soaps, body washes, detergents, and other compounds, has some unique chemical properties. When it moves through wastewater treatment plants, it binds with chlorine and forms what's called a chlorinated triclosan derivative. That derivative is then exposed to sunlight and wastewater treatment effluent and converts to dioxins. Since 1963, there's been a 200 to 300% increase in the triclosan-derived dioxins in Lake Pepin sediment, while all other dioxins have decreased by 73 to 90%. Triclosan-derived dioxins have now been found accumulating in our other lakes as well. We do know there are some human health risks associated with exposure to triclosan itself, but that's not really the reason we're here. Dioxin formation alone should be sufficient information to replace these products with products that work similarly but don't create dioxin downstream. Human health risks, including increased allergy susceptibility in children and risks for healthy fetal development in pregnant women, have been studied and found in humans exposed to these products. Lab research on test animals indicates triclosan can disrupt reproductive, thyroid, central nervous systems, and other systems, endocrine systems, in animals. But really why we're here is that we want to talk about the effectiveness of these products. While using hand soap, typically these will come in concentrations of between 0.1% and 0.46%. There's no evidence that hand washing with triclosan soaps offers any health advantage over washing with plain old soap and water. This is the conclusion of both the American Medical Association and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Allison Aiello, the University of Michigan School of Public Health, said there's no significant benefit of using triclosan soaps compared with plain soap, and we've seen this both with bacteria on hands as well as wellness symptoms in the community. In essence, the recommendation is to just use soap and water rather than antibacterial soaps. Luckily, this legislation doesn't prevent you. If you wish to use antibacterial soaps against the recommendation of the Department of Health and the American Medical Association, God bless, do it, okay? We've got three soaps here. One is Dial antibacterial, contains triclosan and kills 99.99% of bacteria on the hands. This is another from Lysol hand soap that kills 99.99% of bacteria on hands. And this is a common hand sanitizer that kills 99.99% of bacteria on hands. If you insist on using antibacterial hand soap, you can still do that, but only one of these products can put dioxins in our environment further downstream. This bill doesn't take antibacterial soaps off the marketplace. It doesn't take antibacterial hand cleansers off the marketplace. All we're asking is to push the use of non-dioxin-forming antibacterials and restrict the use of dioxin-forming antibacterials. That's what this bill is about. Toothpastes. Triclosan in toothpaste is approved by the FDA, and it is recognized to kill germs that cause bacteria. Colgate Total Toothpaste is the only toothpaste on the market that contains triclosan. However, there are other oral hygiene products that do not contain triclosan that make exactly the same claims, including Colgate Total Toothpaste, which also kills the bacteria that cause gingivitis and doesn't use triclosan. There are also alternative oral hygiene products like Common Standard Mouthwash that make the exact same claims. They kill the bacteria that cause gingivitis, and they don't contain triclosan, so they don't put dioxins into our environment. Dish detergents. The FDA, U.S. Health Department, American Medical Association, they all say using these products doesn't provide any benefit, and Department of Health and American Medical Association recommend you not use them. But if you insist on using them anyways, there are antibacterial products that kill germs in your dishes. Some of them contain triclosan. Others don't. This product used to and was recently reformulated without it. They both make the same health claim, the same effectiveness claim. The only functional difference between these two products is that this one forms dioxin downstream and this one doesn't. That's probably why a number of producers are already phasing out the use of these products. Colgate Palmolive replaced triclosan in its Palmolive antibacterial dish liquid. Its soft soap has been reformulated without triclosan. GlaxoSmithKline removed it from Aquafresh and Sensodyne toothpaste. They join every other toothpaste on the market with one exception, not using triclosan. Johnson & Johnson recently phased out the use of triclosan in all of its products. The case for triclosan is this. It's not whether or not it kills bacteria. It kills bacteria. Soap cleans your hands. Triclosan soap cleans your hands. The case is whether or not the costs of triclosan downstream are worth the risks upstream. And our position is simply this. Triclosan performs about equally well with other products. There are other antibacterials on the market, but only one antibacterial causes dioxins to build up in our environment downstream, and that's why this bill has moved forward. Our medical and health professionals recommend against using all of these. If you insist on using them, okay, go for it. Our brightest research minds are telling us that there's one antibacterial agent in here that we should not use, and the others are safe to use. Our request is simply that you support this piece of legislation and remove triclosan and its partner products from the marketplace. Thank you.
Senator Kosaka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, I'm looking at this report handed out from the American Cleaning Institute. And the very last paragraph, it talks about the Minnesota Department of Health has developed a health-based guidance value of 50 parts per billion for triclosan in drinking water. And then on the bottom it says the level of triclosan found in Minnesota wastewater and surface waters are more than 10 times lower than the level Minnesota Department of Health has determined as safe drinking water. So you're talking about water downstream, and I'm saying, well, it doesn't seem to be a problem. And then I know that the U.S. FDA doesn't currently confirm that there's known hazards to humans in this triclosan. I'm just wondering, why a strong push? I mean, we can choose to buy or not to buy. you know, I know that clearly I think it's a flu fighter as far as eliminating germs. In this bill, we're allowing hospitals, why do they suddenly think that this is important and you don't? We're going to make an exception for commercial food preparation, I believe. I mean, why not our homes? Why not the Capitol? I mean, I shake a lot of people's hands. And so I know I'm rambling, but I just, there's just a number of things that I just find troubling.
Mr. Chair, I know he wants to respond as well, but I'd like to say that, first of all, hospitals and so on are looking for alternatives as well. I know that Kaiser Permanente in California is phasing out triclosan. Certainly for routine hand washing and so on settings, if there are some specific things in hospitals and so on, fine. And that's why we're saying, look, we'd rather be cautious and, you know, if we 90-some percent of the market right now of where it's used that's ending up in our water supply is from the personal care products that AMA and others are saying you don't need, well, let's take it out, the easy part of it. There is, again, the whole reason, I think when soft soap, I think the when it was out in Minnetonka, I think they were one of the first companies to start using it. And people, oh, I got this hand washing soap and I got this one and this one's antibacterial. That's a good thing. We want to kill bacteria. So I think the bottom line is if there's no reason for it, which the health department, AMA, FDA, others are all saying, you know, just wash your hands. It's soap without the antibacterial, it'll be just as good. But in terms of those other uses, you know, hey, that's why we're trying to do it. We're respecting the concerns Ecolab has raised in terms of commercial food production. I'm not the expert in that. I'm just saying, look, the areas where it's been studied and been recognized as a problem and there are alternatives to it, let's do it. And besides that, you know, it does kill bacteria. We're not doubting that, but it does have other risks. It's an endocrine disruptor, which is not something we want to be putting in our bodies. And, that line you have in their thing saying, yeah, the water level in our water is more than 10 times lower than the safe drinking water. Well, safe drinking water is not the concern here. I don't think you want one part per billion of dioxin in your body. I mean, we're talking about different concerns in the environment in your body. The toothpaste that has it in is 0.3%. I mean, we're talking 30 million parts per billion in that, I mean, in the product. In other words, let's keep this in mind. We're not saying you're getting it through the drinking water. Our concern is when you're washing it on your hands and so on, and you're brushing teeth and everything else with it, that's a concern where that's where you're getting it into your body, not through the drinking water. Concern about the water, the wastewater, is that it's putting dioxin in our lakes and rivers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, if it's good enough for the hospitals, and we know that the FDA has said there's no known hazards to human, you know, if we're going to have it in the hospitals, I'd sure like it in my home if I want to. You know, if it's a, you know, proven product that the hospitals prefer to have the opportunity to have, I don't mind having it in my home if I so choose, and that's just where I'm coming from.
A couple things. First, to your earlier point, triclosan concentrations in water, surface water. We're not really concerned about triclosan concentrations itself because triclosan breaks down to dioxin and thus does not remain triclosan in surface waters. Its presence in drinking water, while it has been detected in drinking water in Minnesota, is well below that health risk limit. But as Senator Marty alluded to, that level, if at that health risk level, you consume 2 liters of water today, you get about 0.1 milligram per liter of triclosan in your body. If you use it as a hand soap, you'd get about 3 milligrams or 30 times that amount absorbed into your or exposed to your body through your skin. The primary pathways of exposure for triclosan into our body, this is just the triclosan side, not the dioxin side. Primary triclosan exposure pathways are dermal, through our skin, ingestion, and inhalation. It's really not a drinking water source that we're concerned about. So the concentrations of triclosan in surface water are sort of irrelevant. And that own document that you're referencing also notes that triclosan levels in Minnesota water are safe because triclosan photodegrades in the environment so it's not triclosan anymore, which is exactly our point. It photodegrades to dioxin and thus is not triclosan, it is dioxin. Dioxin is the bioaccumulating agent. Dioxin is the persistent carcinogen. Dioxin is the trouble. Triclosan is just the delivery mechanism. As to the FDA's position on, the FDA hasn't said, well, the FDA says that antibacterial soaps really aren't recommended for use in, for consumers, and they provide no health benefit whatsoever. However, FDA also has been working since, I want to say, 1994 on finishing the monograph for this product. I think I was a freshman in high school then. We didn't have cell phones then. We couldn't measure things in parts per trillion then. That's an awfully long time to be waiting on making a decision. So the FDA's 1994 position on something when we couldn't even measure these kinds of dioxins and we didn't have the research on health or dioxin formation isn't particularly relevant to the modern era. But nonetheless, feel free to ignore their advice and use antibacterial cleansing products. Go for it. You've got all kinds of options on the market that are 100% antibacterial. They just don't contain triclosan, which is one of many antibacterial agents, but it's the only one that forms dioxin downstream. We're not saying don't use antibacterials at home. If you want to use it at home, I encourage you to do so. Department of Health recommends otherwise. American Medical Association also recommends otherwise. But this bill won't stop you. What we're simply asking for is the one antibacterial agent that we know is causing a persistent, highly carcinogenic compound to build up in our environment could simply be substituted quite easily with products, and that's already what the marketplace is doing.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty, this bill would potentially ban any personal care products, cosmetics, or cleaning products that contain triclosan. Can you give me a rough estimate on the number of products we're talking about that would be banned?
Senator Brown, I don't know the number. I think Mr. Russell or one of our witnesses last night said 70-some percent of liquid soap has triclosan in and 20% of bar soap. I will guess it was a lot higher. I think those numbers were actually a few years ago. We think it's been coming down because, again, as we said, this is a dish soap, but they've reformulated it and so on because of concern about this. So it is slowly moving out of the market, but it is a decent chunk of the products. Again, I remember the hand sanitizers, the hand soaps you used to buy, you'd go in the store, some said antibacterial, some not, often the same manufacturers, they just take out the triclosan in one product.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, based on some of the comments you've just made and what Mr. Russell has made, it sounds like the industry is already moving towards away from using this in their products. Why do we need a ban if the industry is moving away from utilizing this?
Mr. Chair, the industry is moving very slowly away from this. I think when you hear from the chamber, assuming they're going to testify tonight, they'll say, you know, they're worried about state-by-state regulation. Well, I realistically think you get three or four states, and I think that's going to happen in the next couple of years. We do that. I frankly think we won't need a national ban. I think the industry will recognize that's the case. I mean, there's one toothpaste on the market that still uses it. They may be testifying tonight, too. I think, you know, when pressure starts getting, when people start going, a couple of states start removing it from the market, they'll do what their competitors are doing because they'll recognize it's no longer a positive sales pitch. Right now, they feel they can sell the product by saying it kills bacteria.
Senator Goodwin.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask our health department. I'm sorry, I didn't get your last name.
Mr. Russell.
Mr. Russell.
Mr. Russell, that's good. Trevor.
Trevor is fine.
That's fine. Mr. Russell is good.
A few years ago, and I don't know if it's still valid, there were some scientists in one committee that were talking to us about a water, lakes and streams and rivers and the amount of pollution in there, and they were talking like 80%. I remember that figure, 80% of our waters are impaired impaired, meaning has some kind of pollution in or whatever. So it just makes sense to me that we're going to try everything that we can to stop that and not to add to it. And this is a product, it sounds like, that is unnecessary. And if anybody ever goes down to the Science Museum, you go into that lab part and they'll show you different things you wash your hands with, and then you look under a microscope to see what removes germs. And, you know, the plain old soap removes germs every bit as well, as you were saying, as the antibacterial stuff does that's up there. So I really do think this sounds like a product we can do without. Are we going to wait until the industry decides they're going to just pull this out on their own? And how long would we have to wait? And if there's no pressure from the states to do so, you really think that they're going to change that? My question to you is, do you see more how long do you think it would take, if you have any guess, for the industry to take this product out of circulation?
Go ahead. We have opposition, and we have five more bills, and some of us have pretty important committee meetings at 8 o'clock. So want to take a shot at that, then we'll move on to the opposition, I think.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think the opposition you're about to hear from is substantial evidence that the industry does not plan to complete a full phase-out of the use of triclosan in cleaning products anytime soon in Minnesota. You know, these products are what we would refer to from an economics perspective as virtually perfect substitutes. If you want to buy BP gas and the BP gas station isn't there and the Holiday gas station is across the street, you go there instead. If this isn't on the market, you get this. If the Colgate Total with triclosan isn't on the market, you can get Colgate Total with a different product on the market in the same place at the same time for comparable price. So we do feel like some of the perfect substitution issues and simplicity of substitution in the marketplace might yield, after a little bit of initiative at the state policy level, some of these producers completing their switchover. But I think the testimony you're about to hear suggests that the manufacturers and promoters within the industry are pretty aggressively promoting the continued use of these products, and we feel like it could be a decade before that happens.
Okay. Well, we'll hear from them. You don't have to speak for them. All right, any questions right now? Okay, let's hear from the opposition to this Senate bill. Welcome to the...
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I will be very brief. Senator Marty has pointed out the Minnesota Chamber believes that chemical regulation should not be done state by state, chemical by chemical, number one, Mr. Chairman. Number two, you have heard the success of this product, and it is shown in the exemptions that it works in hospitals, and thank Senator Marty for putting in, at the request of Ecolab and the testimony we heard last night, in the use of commercial food preparation. That shows that this product is very successful in those two exemptions that we show out in hospitals and foodborne illnesses. Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty pointed out one of my other parts of that we had some concerns about what we call the manufacturer-retail split. Businesses don't live. We're already through. Most businesses are already through 2013. They're in 2014. They're in 2015. So there is product in the market right now. We need to define when we have to stop manufacturing it and when it can be sold at retail. I think he has understood that concern. Senator Gazelka pointed out one of my other points, that the Department of Health has a health-based value for this in drinking water at 50 parts per million. And, Mr. Chairman, one last point is that in the Minnesota Department of Health, we have a contaminants of emerging concern program in there. They just announced Friday that in that program, the chemicals under review are triclocarbon, are going to be reviewed currently. So I think this would be the proverbial cart before the horse before we ban the product. We think that we should let the Department of Health look at it, study it under their contaminants of emerging concern program, and then decide what to do, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I stand for any questions.
Questions of Mr. Quillis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Marty, did you have a closing
Mr. Chair, I thought there may be other...
Wait, there's another... I think that's Mr. Johnson. Is Dave Johnson. Senator Johnson, welcome back.
It's just Dave Johnson. thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Johnson. I represent the American Cleaning Institute.
and I'll try to be brief as well. The American Cleaning Institute is a organization that represents formulators of soaps, detergents, and general cleaning products used in household, commercial, industrial, and institutional settings. Since 1926, they've promoted health through personal hygiene and effective cleaning. And I'd just like to make a couple brief comments. There was, in the other body, there was a hearing in the last week and a half where the Department of Health testified, and they testified that hand washing is the single most important means of preventing the spread of infection. And there's been a lot of discussion about whether these soaps are more effective than regular soap and water, but no one has argued the point that it is an effective alternative for washing your hands and cleaning your hands. The Department of Health also put out some statistics that are in the testimony about how many people don't wash their hands when they go to the bathroom, for example, on some studies they've done. And it's surprising. And so I think our observation is to remove an effective alternative at a time when that's one of the most important things you can do for public health seems to be a little concerning and something things should people should think about. The second point we would make is we think this will ban a significant number of products. The bill is introduced, was only introduced a week ago, and we're still trying to get the final numbers. But ACI estimates that this bill has the ability to ban hundreds of products, soaps, hand soaps, other types of products. The Environmental Working Group on their website says that there are currently 1,063 products that contain triclosan and 72 products that contain triclocarbon. This bill also says it bans other similar antibacterial compounds in addition to those two things. So depending on how that's defined, it could be an even broader universe, including some of the alternatives that have been discussed here tonight. We would also be concerned about the number of years. We appreciate the fact that you're sensitive to that issue, Senator Marty. But I would note that when they did the automatic dishwashing detergent issue with phosphorus a few years ago, that was a much longer time. And the reason for that is if you're going to consider banning hundreds of products, it's not a question of just getting them off the shelves. It's giving people time to basically go and reformulate all their products before they put them on the shelves. And so we think there needs to be a longer time frame if the legislature decides that they want to move forward with that. And then the last point I would make, I think there's some testimony in your packet, and if people have questions about that, I could try to answer those questions. But, you know, the experience of automatic dishwashing detergent and the banning of phosphorus in those commercial or in those residential applications, but not the commercial one, I think matters. You know, a few years ago, it was all about getting phosphorus out of the environment, even though the phosphorus in detergents was less than 1% of the phosphorus load in the environment. A bill went through the process over a number of years, and all the commercial uses were removed. And so out of that 1%, it was more than another 0.5% were removed from the environment. So when the time you were done, you weren't really removing much from the environment. And I think that's something that folks should consider here. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to testify. And I'd be happy to try and answer any questions anybody might have.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further comments from anybody in the audience? Senator Pappas, did you wish to?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a few comments, and then when the time is right, I'd like to move the bill.
We got an amendment first.
I'll move the – is it an author's amendment? Not an author's amendment, but Senator Marty's amendment. I'll move the A1 amendment.
Okay. Should we, on this one, add July 1st, 14th?
Right. July 1st instead of June 1st, so give it more than
Senator
a year.
Senator Pappas incorporates that in the
– what's the date? It says January 1st.
July 1st of 14th.
Instead of January.
That's part of the A1 amendment.
So it's July 1st instead of January.
All right, on the amendment, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Can I speak?
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was my understanding that someone from Ecolab spoke last night, and I stand corrected if I'm wrong with this, but what I heard is that the estimate on application was 90% consumer and 10% commercial use. So we are maintaining in this bill 10% for commercial and medical use of triclosan. But if 90% can be removed from impairing our waters, that's a big improvement. And when there's so many products on the market that don't have triclosan but still are antibacterial, you know, we know that hand washing, we all know now that hand washing is the best. You know, my mother always said to me, make a friend with soap. But hand washing for 20 seconds, we teach our children, saying happy birthday to me twice, that's about 20 seconds. And then you kill 99.9% of the germs, something like that. That's really the best way. So if people, though, are in situations where they're not washing their hands good, then an antibacterial may be a good alternative. But why not support, then, the products that don't contain triclosan, which is creating all this water, impaired water problem for us? And you know that, what did you say, Senator Goodwin? 80% of our waters are impaired because they turn into dioxins. So this, to me, is what I call a no-brainer. We should move ahead with this. If the industry needs a little bit more time to phase out those products, fine. But, yes, the markets will respond as consumers are more educated on this issue, but sometimes that takes a little bit too long. And in the meantime, we're spending millions and millions of dollars dealing with impaired waters.
Yep. Senator Housley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty, I'm just wondering, where do long-term care facilities fit into this? Are they covered under the medical facilities?
Mr. Chair, Senator Housley, yes, that's correct. They'd be covered there. And by the way, the toxicologist from Ecolab is here tonight. And I think if you want to hear from him, he could speak to why we would exempt hospital, medical facilities, and health food preparers and not residential things. But my understanding is, and I don't want to speak for Ecolab, but that their concerns have been addressed, and I think there's a logical reason for doing it. We're not just saying, well, they're complaining, and therefore we're not doing it. And again, as I said, I think there is a different situation in a medical setting than this. And when they say for bacteria washing your hands, Senator Pappas said it right. But yes.
Thank you.
Senator Kosalka, then I think we're ready to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Marty, is this the first year that you've offered this bill banning this chemical?
Mr. Chair, yes. So it had been offered about a decade ago by another former colleague.
Okay. Chair, I'm going to make a motion that we lay over this bill. I'd rather not vote no on this bill. It wasn't till tonight that I was made aware through testimony that triclosan is about to be studied by the Minnesota Department of Health. I really think that we should wait. We're talking about hundreds of products. A first year that a bill has been submitted, I think it's been out there for a couple of weeks, or if longer, 1 week. And so my motion would be to lay it over. That's my motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would urge members to vote yes. I think that we can take lots and lots of time to study these issues, and we're never going to have a definite answer. But better to err on the side of caution. We know the science is there. We know that the dioxins create the problem. There are alternatives on the market. There's no reason that we have to continue to tolerate products that pollute our waters.
But, Senator, you meant to
say no.
Vote no on the tabling. Let's decide.
I like the yes one.
It's Kenneth Kosalka.
Did I say yes?
Sorry. Okay, that the motion is by Senator Kosalka to lay the bill over. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Division.
Division. All those in favor of the Kosalka motion, raise your hand. I'm not counting. I put that up to the eyewitnesses here. Seven to five.
You didn't vote against.
Okay, there is seven in favor.
of tabling and 4 opposed.
We didn't vote.
Chair, you haven't voted on opposed yet.
What did we do?
We've only counted.
Raise no hands.
Raise no
hands. Oh, the raising of hands. What's the vote then?
You have to ask to have them raise their hands for the no.
Oh, we want to hear the other side? I hate to, you know, I bring it brought up in South St. Paul, the first thing I was taught to do is to count. And I will count. Those opposed, raise your hand. Excuse me. Is it 5? Okay, now on a 7-5 vote, motion prevails.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Next bill to be Senator Rest. Formaldehyde in products for children, prohibition. Senator Rest, Senate File 357. Senator Rest, welcome to the.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you Senate File 357, which is a proposal to. Let's see, just wait on those, if you will. A proposal to, with regard to children's products, which we define in the bill at this point, products that are primarily marketed for children. Or used by children under the age of 12, personal care products such as shampoo, things that touch the body of a child, their skin, and we have worked with a number of entities throughout this process, and feel that we've made a good idea, a better bill, and I appreciate. The work that's been done on it, particularly by people who have initially expressed some serious concerns. We're taking an additional step in this committee with the A5 amendment, which Senator Goodwin has graciously offered to present for us.
Well, should we handle the
Mr.
Should we handle the A5 Goodwin amendment? Somebody want to explain the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm offering the A5 amendment, but we do have somebody here that can explain it better than I can. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to defer to my witness, who's been doing a lot of work on this amendment, to explain how it came to be and the concerns that it addresses.
Okay. Schuller.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Kathleen Schuller. I'm representing Healthy Legacy. I work for the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. So the amendment to the formaldehyde bill, basically it inserts the word primarily so that it's very clear that the product is intended primarily for a child under the age of 12. Another amendment is to insert exceptions to the bill to include pharmaceutical products and biologics, and also children's toys that are covered and defined in a toy standard. An additional amendment to the bill is that manufacturers would have until August 1st, 2014, to phase out the use of formaldehyde, and retailers would have an additional year, being August 1st, 2015, to phase out formaldehyde. So those are the amendments.
Any questions, members? Any discussion? Senator Goodwin, news, yes. Her amendment A5, all those in favor?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rust, did you? Madam Chair and members, we have, again, gone through a lengthy process with this bill. We have, I think, met major concerns expressed by a number of different interests, and I'm going to ask her to give some more general testimony in favor okay. of the bill, and then you can hear from those that perhaps can, if not support it, be neutral or can suggest further further improvements.
Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair, again, I'm representing Healthy Legacy. We are a 36-member public health coalition. And I'll keep my testimony fairly brief. Formaldehyde is a chemical that has been declared a priority chemical by the Department of Health. That means that the Department of Health has looked at criteria for health effects of formaldehyde on human health. And the priority chemicals, there are nine of them. They include chemicals that can cause cancer, that can cause reproductive problems, that can cause developmental problems, that can cause immune problems, that are hormone disruptors. Now, formaldehyde in particular is a respiratory sensitant. It can affect children's respiration when they breathe it in. It's also a skin irritant. Long-term exposure can cause cancer as well, and also asthma and more serious respiratory problems. Formaldehyde is not actually intentionally added to children's personal care products, but there are an array of chemicals that release formaldehyde. And I believe you have a handout, an orange handout that looks like this. So there's a list of chemical names that are added as preservatives to the products, and they release formaldehyde when they're used. So if you, it's in a shampoo, and you shampoo the child's hair, they breathe in the formaldehyde. We know there are safer alternatives, such as potassium sorbate and sodium benzoate. Those are much safer. And many products are available on the market. We looked in various stores and found that there are products that do not have formaldehyde releasers in them, including many Target brand personal care products. Johnson & Johnson has pledged to phase out formaldehyde releasers in their personal care products by the end of 2013. But Johnson & Johnson is one company. We want to make sure all the products are safe for parents so they don't have to look up these long chemical names and figure out whether their kids are going to be exposed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Members, do you have questions or discussion? Is there anyone else that would like to testify?
Did the amendment get added?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tony Quillis again from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank Senator Rest very much for addressing a number of concerns that we had been working with her on, and you can see those in the A5 amendment. As I mentioned previously, we talked about that manufacturer retail differential. That's in starting on 1.6 all the way down to the end of the amendment at 1.15. The other exemptions for pharmaceuticals and toys. The definition, making sure that we're clarifying that it is to primarily, Madam Chair, the one last one is over the age. We're going to keep working with Senator Russ when we go through that. I have a five-year-old, soon to be six, who thinks she's going to be 14 next week, who has blown through the SpongeBob SquarePants and Disney Dairy Princess soap already, and she wants to keep using her mother's right away. I've got all to do to keep her from putting on makeup before she goes to kindergarten every day. So we're going to keep working with her. We're okay. debating her grandson and my daughter,
well,
so
my
we'll
story.
Figure it out. So, Madam Chair, I want to thank Senator Rest again. And we will keep working with her on the age, but I want to thank her for the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka.
He scooped me, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, if I may respond.
Senator, you want to?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Mr. Quillis.
Oh,
would
he's over there.
I know. I want him to stay here. I don't mind. Just a minute.
He can stand there. Senator Rust. Go
Mr.
ahead.
Madam Chair, I have been speaking with Mr. Quillis, and I want you to know that yesterday, when I was meeting with Healthy Legacy advocates, I was also being shadowed by a young man. who happens to be my grandson, and his mother. And he was very taken with this bill because he sat in on the little mini conference that we were having. And we heard that the chamber was thinking of a much lower age. And he shook his head. And he said, well, you know, maybe not 12. But he said, how about 8? And he said, you know, Grandma, when I got to be 8, I started using adult products. But before that, I didn't. And he said, I think that that would, might be a good compromise. And so, Madam Chair, I would like one of your members to offer an amendment that I think, if not meeting Mr. Quillis's age issue, splitting the difference, it nevertheless, I think, speaks to the argument he made on behalf of his 5-year-old going on 25 and my 10-year-old grandson, who I think is a responsible consumer and understood the bill, and he thought that that would be a good compromise that the Senate should adopt. So I would I wonder if Senator Goodwin might help me out that.
Senator Goodwin?
I will offer that.
Offers to change the age to
in
from
line
12
one
to 8.
In line 1-8? Strike 12 and insert 8. That. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everyone understand the oral amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Senator Goodwin.
Welcome. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rest, just a couple questions. Same question as the last bill. Is this the first year this has come forward, or has this been an ongoing effort?
Madam Chair, Senator Gazelka, I have dealt with this issue one time before.
That's fine.
Okay, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, but didn't we ban formaldehyde in insulation quite a few years ago because of the mobile homes that were people were getting respiratory problems and particle board from particle board and from formaldehyde in the particle board. I don't know.
Is there anyone here that can help us with
that? I don't
think we know.
I don't know.
But the issue is what you're saying
quite
is it's been brought
sure
up
did,
before.
Yeah.
Okay, Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know it was during the hurricanes, but I don't know exactly what the end result was there. I don't know. Just a couple questions then. I was going to actually ask you why age 12. Now my question is why age 8?
Because you heard from a consumer advocate who's an expert.
Madam Chair, Senator Rest, besides your grandson, is there a scientific data or is it just a place you're trying to find compromise? And
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair and Senator Gazelka, seriously, it is an attempt to find compromise, certainly. And but I thought that the, quite frankly, the statement he made just after hearing from the advocates seemed to me to be a reasonable age, and probably it is the case that a lot of 12-year-olds are using adult products, and we want these to be the ones that are primarily is the key here, primarily. Marketed to young children.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rest, I guess part of my concern is then I think the end result is more going to be about labeling the product. In other words, I don't know how you market a product and say it's for a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old but not a 6-year-old. You know, is it going to be a label that says you can't not safe for 8 and under? I'm just trying to figure out where you're trying to go.
Madam Chair and Senator Gazelka, certainly a manufacturer could say that on a label if they wanted it. I think it would be, you know, up to the enforcement folks to say whether or not that's what actually happens.
One final question. And Madam Chair, Senator Russ, you may not know this. I'm just getting up to speed on this particular chemical, but I thought I read that this chemical is naturally found in foods. Is that correct? And
Senator Rest?
I think it's food.
Madam Chair and Senator Gazelka, we've had that question any number of times, and so I'm going to let the advocates give you more explanation that I hope will make you feel comfortable.
Madam Chair, Senator, the fact that formaldehyde is naturally occurring is irrelevant. We are basically just trying to regulate the intentional addition of formaldehyde-releasing chemicals to personal care products that would expose children. They can breathe them in.
Well, Madam Chair, to the testifier, I mean, if that is true that it's in food, it's not irrelevant because, you know, whether they ingest it or use it as some product, I mean, to me, it's either way, it's part of them. And if it's not known in a solid form to be a problem, I think there has been problems with the gas form of it. I'm not sure this is necessary.
Senator Rest?
We've made our case, I think.
Okay. Senator Day.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rest, I guess I have a couple of questions or a question on the enforcement part of it, how, kind of following up on what Senator Gazelka talked about, how would that be enforcement be done if we put something on a product stating that it's not to be used by children under age 8 and it's on a store shelf and people continue to purchase it? How are we going to handle that, or how are we going to enforce that?
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. The if you look at the second section, it doesn't really reference the purchaser. It references the manufacturer who may not knowingly, and that is a standard in law, sell or offer for initial sale at a retail a children's product that contains formaldehyde. So it's not on the purchaser. It's not their responsibility. It's the manufacturer.
Thank you.
Senator
Dames?
Madam Chair, I understand Senator Rest, I guess. So if you have the manufacturer not manufacturing products that they typically feel would be used by somebody under 8, so they're manufacturing products for people 9 and over, we still have the issue with people purchasing those products and use them for people under age 8. Is that correct? And how do we handle that? Or do we not?
Madam Chair and Senator Dames, just like we do for in a number of areas in our lives, we have special concerns for children that we are not. It's not that we care about adults, but they tend to be a special concern for us. And I think you can think of yourself any number of areas of life where we seek to protect children in a special way that we. Really don't extend to adults in that regard. And so I think there was a study actually pointed out in another committee, I don't know if you were on that one, where it was that the amount of formaldehyde in a product in terms of its effect on adults was not the same as it is on tender skin of small children. So I think that's we have to make judgments somewhere along the way, and I think that the special concern for children is completely warranted in this instance.
Is there anyone else that wants to testify or say a few words? Members, any further discussion? Senator Latz. Yes.
Madam Chair, in response to Senator Dame's comment, I mean, you're always going to have... If it's just a matter of labeling, you're always going to have some parents who don't care if the product says don't use this for someone under age X.
But I would bet 90 to 95% of the parents are going to heed the warning because they don't want to expose their kids to something that might be especially dangerous for kids. I'm willing to take those odds in favor of protecting the kids' health.
Senator Russ, what is your do you have, would you like to make a motion?
Madam Chair, Senator Goodwin, if she would be so kind as to
Senator
move the
Goodwin.
Bill.
Thank you. I'll move that Senate file number 357 as amended. Recommended to pass.
And move to this and to the floor?
To the floor.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, say no.
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 Motion carries. Prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Okay, Senate File 379.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Steve.
Go ahead if you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Senate File 379 is a bill that would ban bisphenol A in children's food products. And so if I can just give the committee a brief overview of the bill, the amendment that we have that we've worked with to offer here today, and I'll try to describe the bill as it passed first through the previous three committees that it's been through, and then talk about the amendment and the compromise that we have worked on. So the bill that's before you right now, Senate File 379, would ban bisphenol A, which is identified by the Department of Health as a chemical of concern. The bill that's before you would have banned it in children's food products that are intended or marketed to be consumed by a child 12 years of age or younger. And after listening to much of the testimony and the people who raised concerns about the bill, what I'm now proposing that I hope a member of this committee will move the A6 amendment is that the bill would apply to, it would ban bisphenol A in baby food, in infant formula, and in food that is explicitly marketed for consumption by toddlers. And so perhaps at this time.
That's the A6 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Pappas moves the A6 amendment. Discussion?
Mr.
An A6 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Senator Sieben.
So thank you again. The A6 amendment addresses concerns we heard from the industry that said that the original bill where we were explicitly trying to ban bisphenol A in food that's marketed to children under the age of 12, we are paring that down now to only apply to toddlers' food products, baby food, and formula. And so there is some, I don't know if you're all familiar, but when we're talking about toddler food products and there's a definition now in the A6 amendment, we are talking about products that are explicitly designed for toddlers. So it's not baby food necessarily that's in the jar that you may think of, but it's things like this that say toddler meal bowls. And the reason we came to this agreement or understanding was that there are known, first of all, these products like this don't contain bisphenol A, intentionally added bisphenol A, from what we've been told. And if any of these would, there are known alternatives for the way that they are packaged. The canned Food Association, or the canners here in Minnesota, were concerned about bisphenol A being added to cans. So you'll see that in the definition of toddler food on lines 1.19 of the amendment, it says that toddler food in canned containers is not included in the definition. So with this A6 amendment, I hope that we've gone a long way towards trying to create peace in the valley, as you like, Mr. Chair.
Thank
and
you.
I'm happy to stand for questions.
Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sieben, I commend you for the work on the A6. It probably doesn't meet everybody 100%, but it seems to really address the concerns that I'd heard from folks. So much more narrowly defined.
Good. I know you put a lot of work into trying to fix this up. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator, I have questions on what scientific studies have been done to show these effects. I'm reading a report here from a board-certified toxicologist at an environmental consulting firm, Mr. Peterson, who says that the newest studies regarding BPA confirm the lack of effect findings from previous older studies. Can you tell me what recent studies show that this is harmful?
Sure, Mr. Chair, and to answer Senator Brown's concerns, not to be dismissive, but this we already did discuss this in the Health Committee and in the Environment Committee. But as was talked about in previous committees, BPA has been identified as one of the 9 chemicals designated by our Department of Health as a priority chemical, which means that MDH has reviewed authoritative scientific sources and determined that it has toxic effects on human health. So I think that one thing we were attempting to do with the A6 amendment, too, was to say that that although some scientific bodies will say that the evidence is not conclusive that BPA is indeed harmful, others will disagree with that. But what we have crafted here is a compromise in that we are limiting BPA. We're making products that where there are known alternatives. So, in other words, you can still have your toddler food product. You can still have a jar of baby food. And there are other alternatives that are currently being used by the industry in place of BPA. So that's what we're attempting to do here, and I think that was why we've reached a pretty reasonable point here with the bill as amended.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if somebody from the Department of Health is here that could come to the testifying stand.
Anybody here from the Department of Health? Oh, we got to take her.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Linda Brummer from the Minnesota Department of Health. I didn't quite hear the question.
My question is, can you tell me, is this listed as one of the chemicals on watch, can you tell me what kind of studies and stuff have been done by the Department of Health and what your determination is as far as this chemical, as far as its health hazards and stuff like that?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the priority chemicals are a list that's developed by the Health Department, and bisphenol A is indicated as having developmental effects. The list of priority chemicals is developed according to the following criteria. The chemical has been found through biomonitoring to present in human blood, including umbilical cord blood, breast milk, urine, or other bodily tissues, or the chemical has been found through sampling and analysis to be present in household dust and or air, drinking water, or elsewhere in the home environment, or the chemical has been found through monitoring to be present in fish, wildlife, or the natural environment. So those are the criteria that we start listing, screening chemicals of high concern, and then there's another cut of those chemicals that meet other qualifications. And this is a formula that appears in the Toxic Children's Act that we'll hear is on the schedule tonight.
So that's where that list comes from. I did bring copies of the list of priority chemicals if the members are interested to see that.
Senator Deems.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, and thank you, I understand where that how they get on the list, but my real question is what type of research has been done by the Department of Health to see what the effects of those chemicals are with the age that we're dealing with?
Mr. Chair, Senator Deems, the Health Department reviews other research. We do not do primary research. So we review the animal studies that have been done. Scientific literature.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Senator Brown and Senator Deems. There is a list that Healthy Legacy passed out of 32 studies. It's documented. Every sentence in here practically is referring to a study that has raised alarms about the impact of BPA. So, I mean, scientists will never say anything is conclusive. That's just the way scientists are. So you have to really go with the overwhelming evidence. And to me, this evidence is overwhelming. Senator Sieben has narrowed it down far more than I like. I think she's almost given away her whole bill. She's compromised so much. So I can hardly see how anyone can object to us protecting babies from infant formula or toddler food or baby food that could be causing extreme problems to our babies.
Senator Kosoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And wherever the Department of Health woman went. Oh, I'm sorry.
She's still
right there.
So I have to sit up straight.
You are valuable.
Senator Gazalka.
Yeah.
Bifocal contact, and it's getting long. But to the testifier, I'm looking at a report handed out, Health Canada's updated assessment of BPA. The very last paragraph on page 4, halfway down the paragraph, it says, therefore, based on the overall weight of evidence, the findings of the previous assessment remain unchanged, and Health Canada's Food Directorate continues to conclude that current dietary exposure to BPA through food packaging uses is not expected to pose a health risk to the general population, including newborns and young children. This conclusion is consistent with those of other food regulatory agencies in other countries, including notably the United States, the European Union, and Japan. So my question is, do you concur with that, or do you have a different view with all these bodies of evidence?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think Senator Pappas had it right that quite often the scientific there's rarely full conclusion that on scientific evidence, you know, one way or another. That and I think the BPA science. Well, first I would ask, what's the date of that publication? Because I understand that there's been a lot more research recently, and so a lot of publications have not been updated.
Mr. Chair, this is September 2012, and they confirm a study that was done in August 2008, mm-hmm. and then they did another one, and the report date is September 2012. And, you know, and it's not just one, though. It's Canada, it's United States, it's European Union, it's Japan. For, you know, groups that very much care about our health and what we're taking in, and I bring that up to say, you know, I appreciate limiting the scope of the bill, but I don't think we know. I think we're jumping to a conclusion that others have not made, and I'm concerned about that.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Sieben.
And Senator Gazelka, to that point, other states, Connecticut, Maine, I believe that's it, have banned BPA in baby food and infant food products already, so Minnesota would not be the first state in that regard.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I was just talking about the body of evidence that we were talking about.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gazelka, I appreciate that you're citing this study from Health Canada, but like I said, and like the testifier from the Department of Health said, Minnesota has categorized BPA as a priority of high concern, a chemical of high concern. And obviously we've already banned BPA exposure. We led the nation, Minnesota led the nation in banning BPA in baby bottles and sippy cups. We're taking a modest step here in that there are known alternatives. We're not even asking Gerber to change anything here. They can already, there's no BPA in this product. Infant formula cans, the vast majority of them already do not use BPA. There are some baby food companies that still use BPA in their packaging. And we're just saying you shouldn't do that when there are known alternatives that are safer.
Okay, we have some witnesses, I believe, that Senator Letts, did you? No.
I was just going to ask, why do we have to wait until there are studies that prove that it's harmful to infants? How many infants are going to be harmed that will show up in that study when we could have acted this year and prevented that harm in the first place, especially when there are known alternatives? If this were the only product that were available to safely, otherwise safely contain infant food, well, then you weigh the risks and the benefits and say, well, we got to get them food, and it's going to be stored on the shelf for however long, so we might as well use this, and it's better than, getting other kind of contamination problems. But if we've got known safe alternatives, why shouldn't we do it now and at least save some kids from those developmental problems that it's believed could cause?
Okay. Why don't we get hear from their opposition, I guess?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis again from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank Senator Sieben for the A6 amendment and working with us as it went through the process. As the bill was introduced, we had a number of very big concerns, as you talked about today during the debate on the bill. There was some concerns about some of the there's not studies, those are findings by government agencies on those studies after they analyzed them. And as Senator Sieben has correctly pointed out, baby food and infant formula, this language has been used in Maine, Vermont, and Connecticut. We were also the first state in the nation to take BPA out of sippy cups and baby bottles. And the reason is we can do it in those. There's different compositions of the chemical. And you can do it in a hard plastic. You can do it in baby bottles and sippy cups. There are other things we can find out that we can do it in, plastic containers. We can do it in glass. But the bill as introduced talked about it in cans. And in cans, it's an epoxy that protects the food, the content inside. If you want to think of it a retail establishment, think of the different size of the cans. There's clams in a can, there's oysters in a can, there's tuna cans, there's soup cans, there's big beet cans. So different products, different size cans. The industry, due to consumer demand, is trying to take it out. But because of the acidity of certain products, the size of the cans, corn it works in, tomato paste in small cans. So we talked to Senator Sieben about that. We've had these discussions. She's gone down and lowered the age, and we're very, very appreciative of that. She's limited it down to infant formula and baby food. We're very, very appreciative of that. Toddler food has never been defined in any other state. We're still having that conversation, but we're very appreciative of that. I know where she wants to go with that, and I understand that. And that, Mr. Chairman, are my comments on that. And I want to thank Senator Sieben again for the A6 amendment and working with us.
Okay. Further testimony on Senate File 379. Did we amend it?
Yes.
Yeah, as amended.
Do we have to vote on the amendment?
Did we vote on the amendment?
I
moved the amendment.
You moved the amendment. We voted on it. Okay, we have before us Senate File 379 as amended.
I would.
Senator.
Any motion? Senator Carlson.
Pappas moves. Senate File 379 as amended. You recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Aye. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members.
Senator Eaton has two bills up. we find
Mr. Chair, while we're waiting,
While
we're waiting, do we have kind of a running list of what we have left?
Yes, we do. We have 466. That's an Eaton bill. Chemical protection, children's chemical protection, and an Eaton bill. 639, product stewardship programs and plans for carpet, architectural paint, primary batteries producers, and then we have a mortgage lenders services loss and mitigation requirement bill from that we just put on yesterday for Taurus Ray. So there's three left, and we do want to, I don't want to rush anything, but I'd like to see if we could do them in the next by 8 o'clock, because I know there's other meetings, but we've got the search committee out for Senator Eaton and Senator Torres Reyes. I don't see her here either.
We just lay them over. We can just lay them over.
I know you can. Nice
try.
No motions, because I'll come.
I will honor the process.
At this time, I should say.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dahl.
Maybe we could start the testimony without her.
That's not a bad idea. Is there are the people here to want to testify on Senate File 466? Yeah, I think that's appropriate. You can issue time management. I think that's all right. Come forward and this is on Senate File 466.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Chair, we have a couple of people that can testify, and then when Senator Eaton gets here, she can present her bill.
That's a good suggestion. Come on up. And welcome to the Minnesota Senate Commerce Committee, and you can start proceeding.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Denise Geldernick, and I live in South St. Paul. I am here as a parent tonight. I've got two children. My oldest is 10, and my youngest is 7, soon to be 8, although you'd think he's going on 38. But and when my oldest was just about 9 months old, I remember putting him down. I had just finished cleaning the kitchen floor. It had all dried. We were all set to go making lunch. I put him down on the floor. And the first thing he does is lean down and lick the floor. And that was the first moment where I thought, okay, I had this vision in my head of him drinking my chlorflaming solution. Because I thought, well, it just really made me think about what's happening here. Is what could he be ingesting as a possibility? So that was the moment when I really realized that I needed to educate myself about the cleaning products that I used in my home to make sure that they were as safe as they could possibly be if such a scenario were to happen. It also made me realize that I needed to think more critically about personal care products that we used in our home and the types of foods that we were eating in the containers and packaging that they came in. I wanted to make certain that I was purchasing products that were not going to harm my children in any way. And it didn't take long before I started to realize that I really couldn't be certain. It's very frustrating for me as a parent to think that I need to question the safety of a product before giving it to my child, whether it might be a food, a toy, a cup, or shampoo. I shouldn't need to do lengthy research or be a chemist to make informed and healthy choices for my family. Any and all products that I purchase for my children should be safe. As a consumer, I take into consideration many things before purchasing something for my children. The first thing on that list of considerations is if an item may have harmful chemicals in it that could adversely affect my children. I strive every day to make the best possible choices for my family. I ask you to help make safe options available to me and other Minnesota parents. Minnesota needs policies that ensure families are kept safe from chemicals like formaldehyde and BPA. I am asking for your help in making sure that my family and all Minnesota families are safe from chemicals like these. I am asking you to support Senate File 466.
Thank you very much. Another witness, would you?
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for hearing my testimony today. My name is Allie LaTurrell. I'm the VP of Government Affairs for a renewable chemical company that's based here in Minnesota, right here in Minneapolis and Plymouth. In my role at the company, and I just want to preface my statements by saying this is, my comments are really the business perspective in terms of looking at legislation that's a framework for analyzing chemicals of concern and implementing regulatory structure around them rather than these one-offs. My response tonight is as a business person, and the response is focused on safety legislation that we're talking about tonight. So at the company, I do project finance, site selection, incentives analysis, and sustainability. I'm a New York State licensed attorney and a former professional investment advisor. So I also have the investment advisory perspective. So BioAmber is a renewable chemical company, like I said. We produce cost-effective chemical alternatives to some of the chemicals that are of concern. So, for example, we have a development deal to produce non-phthalate esters. So phthalates is a chemical that some of us are familiar with. We're a venture-backed company. We've raised over $80 million. We spend $2.1 million in research and development funds here in this city in a 29,000-foot laboratory facility, which is wonderful and we love. And another example of, I believe that NatureWorks is a company here in Minneapolis. There's a wonderful cluster of biotechnology companies here producing these types of alternatives. I believe they produce a BPA alternative to cans. It's a very thin plastic lining. And so that's just something to think about. As I was sitting there, I wanted to mention it. I first just want to thank the Minnesota legislature for being a leader in the nation, where we've seen at the federal level a real stagnation around these issues. Minnesota has really forward-thinking and 21st century response to these issues, but we still have some distance to go. For example, I just want to state about the marketplace. When we're hearing one voice from consumers, we're not thinking about sort of from the business perspective, we're thinking of the marketplace and what exists out there. The American Sustainable Business Council is an organization that represents 140,000 sustainable businesses. They're sort of the counterpart to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce at the federal level. They did a poll, and it found that 74% of national voters believe that there's a serious threat posed to their health due to exposure of toxic chemicals. That's 74% of the marketplace in fear. That is not a good environment for business, whether you're a chemical-producing alternative company or not. We believe strongly that government-led safety standards are foundational to a healthy, prosperous, economically viable marketplace. This is not red tape bureaucracy we're talking about with this bill. We're talking about safety legislation. We also recognize as a business that safety regulation is an expectation. It's really the very embodiment of the purpose of government, ensuring health, safety, and welfare of our citizens. While it's true that increased chemical safety regulation may place a few hurdles for some businesses in the short term, like, for example, higher insurance rates, perhaps, for a company that produces construction materials that have formaldehyde in them. I've heard a testimony in another hearing, not in Minnesota State, that their insurance rates rose 4 times. Well, from my perspective as a former investment advisor, that's not a business I want to invest in, and that's a good thing that the insurance rates are rising. That's the market actually sorting this stuff out on its own. We should let the market do that. We should let the insurance rates rise. We should have those businesses incur the liabilities and take on the risk of producing these harmful chemicals. So over time, we'll see, I believe, a similar situation that we've seen with other hazardous chemicals that have been fully disclosed in the marketplace, like tobacco and alcohol. Philip Morris Company is doing better than ever with no advertising and high taxation. That's because people now have the choice, they understand the risks, and they're making their purchases. And that's something that this legislation will help to have happen, that people will actually have the choice to take a risk and then take it or not. And I'll close by saying that, and I say that risk statement because on the other side of it, a lot of chemical companies talk about risk and hazard and acceptable risk levels. And the fact is there's very, very little disclosure for consumers. There's ad hoc websites that you can go to pick things out. And when you hear these acceptable levels of risk, you're really presupposing that people have the choice and understand what the risk is. But the fact of the matter is, with 250-plus chemicals in our bloodstream, we really do not have an understanding. Therefore, we don't have a choice. So I'll just close by saying, from the business perspective, this is an incredible opportunity. The U.S. Chemical Safety Board's public hearing on Deepwater Horizon, Honorable Jesse Hill Robertson stated at that hearing that oversight, it's not about auditing records for compliance with requirements. It's about technically challenging an industry to live up to its responsibilities and to encourage that industry to continually improve itself. And so I'm here as a chemical company that's rising to this challenge and looking at these issues as an opportunity, and encourage you to continue to drive that change and pass this legislation. Thank you.
All right, good. Senator Eaton, how are you today?
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm well.
Good, good. We like to hear that.
Okay. I'm just asking who spoke.
Yeah, we've had two witnesses already. Have it. The third.
So this is Senate File 466, the Toxic Free Kids Act, and it's a comprehensive approach to evaluate the use of toxic chemicals in children's products. And I will let Mr. Andreessen walk through. Oh, wait a minute. I have an amendment.
Some confusion, I guess.
Which
next
466?
Is that what 466?
4639.
Is it the A4?
A4 amendment?
Is it the A4 amendment? Is it a two sentence? One sentence?
Pardon me?
Is it a small amendment? One or two sentences?
It's A113.
That was not given.
A13, I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, I was not given.
We don't have that, I guess. Yet. So we can continue on until we get it.
Okay.
Any further explanation of the bill?
Sure. You essentially, the federal law is supposed to protect citizens from these chemicals, but has been ineffective. So the states across the country are taking action on their own to protect their citizens. Currently, we've been addressing these concerns over a chemical in a given product through separate legislation. This bill would take a different approach by establishing a framework between state agencies and the manufacturers of children's products to ensure that products being sold in Minnesota are free of toxic chemicals. In 2009, the legislature passed a law tasking the Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Health to create a list of toxic chemicals known to be used in children's products. They created two lists. The first one was chemicals of high concern list, and that was 1,756 chemicals, persistent chemicals that cause cancer, genetic damage, reproductive harm, mental toxicity. The second list, they created the priority chemicals list, and these are chemicals on the high concern list that have been found through biomonitoring to be present in human tissue and the environment. List of nine chemicals should be on your, if you got the fact sheet, the list is on the back. It's BPA, formaldehyde, cadmium, lead, three phthalates, and two flame retardants.
This is terrible.
Okay.
I apologize.
Still looking for the.
I can ask some questions.
Thank you, Soka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Eaton, I'm just wondering if you guys have calculated the impact of the cost to consumers. I'm guessing based on the breadth of what you want to do, there has got to be thousands of chemicals or products that maybe have to change, and that would be an impact to the cost of consumers. But do you have any idea of what that cost is?
Mr. Chair,
Senator
Gazelka, the most chemicals that would ever be affected by this bill would be the 1,756. That is the complete list, and this bill focuses on nine of those. And as far as the cost, I don't know that, but I believe it'll be considerably less than the version that most people have because. We have taken out some of the parts of the bill and done some compromises with industry. So I don't know what to say. Do you have anything to say?
Well, I could ask another question, but the amendment may change it. I'll try it, Mr. Chair. As it stands right now, anyways, Senator Eaton, you know, to me, as I look at it, we're going to limit consumer choice. If they have that up to, you said, 1,700 and something chemicals as a potential, you know, and to me, that is this the first time that you've presented this bill in this expansive form?
I'm
What's
sorry.
That?
Has this a bill of this nature been presented by you or others before this?
Yes. It's I introduced it last year. I did not get a hearing. But currently there's the states of Maine, Washington, and California, plus the Environmental Protection Agency and the European Union and several other countries have identified these as toxic chemicals of concern. So this isn't something that Minnesota just came up with.
Mr. Chair, I can address that question to a certain extent.
Keep her kind of short and sweet if you can.
Yes, I was too ahead. Long before, is what you're saying. Okay.
I was thinking that, but I didn't say that.
Two sentences. Many chemical companies, in fact, all chemical companies, formulate products to adhere to reach European standards or Canadian standards, other standards that are much, much higher than this standard, and they do so. Cost effectively, they simply don't ship them here because we don't require them to.
Okay, Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Eaton, I want to make sure I understood you correctly. Did you say your bill only affects nine of the chemicals?
Senator Eaton.
Chair, at this time, Senator Brown, those are the nine priority chemicals that the Department of Health and the Pollution Control Agency chose as the highest priority.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Eaton, then I'm trying to understand Section 3 of your bill, then, the identification of priority chemicals. It seems to me with the language changes beginning on page or line 3.32 all the way through 4.9, that this language change opens the doors to the 1,756 chemicals that are on the chemicals of high concern list.
Yep. Mr. Andreessen, answer that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, for the record, Dan Andreessen with the Healthy Legacy Coalition. I've been supporting the bill with Senator Eaton. To your question, so the 1,756 is a set list that's not going to change. In order for it to become a priority chemical, it will need to be found in human tissue or through biomonitoring, biosampling. And so the only way it's going to get there is if that chemical is being found in the environment.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Dan Andreessen.
Mr. Andreessen, can you explain to me then why we have language change in Section 3?
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, yeah. The language change is just to clarify what would trigger a chemical of high concern to be placed on a list of priority chemicals.
And Senator Browdy. Mr. Chair, does this, it seems to me this opens the door to these 1,756 chemicals beyond what current statute does. Is that not correct?
Sir.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, the only way it's going to be on the priority chemical list is if it meets these criteria, which is the chemical is being found in the environment or in human tissue.
And, Mr. Chair, I understand that, but the language in this bill moves the language. It has to meet this criteria and this criteria. This language change makes it from and to or. It has to meet this criteria or this criteria. So that opens the door wide on these chemicals.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, the idea was that there are some chemicals that can be found in the environment, can be found in human tissue, but may not be in high production any longer. One example is PFCs, which have been started being phased out of products but are still being found in the environment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A4 amendment.
All right. What? I'm just wondering, somebody said there's like a 7 or 8 page amendment that we don't have. And I'm just wondering if we should kind of put this aside for a minute or two. I see Senator Torres Ray is here, and I believe has worked very hard on her bill, and I think we'll just pause for a moment, Senator, if that's all right.
Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate if you'd lay it over till we get that.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a meaningful, I've heard that it's a lot going on in that amendment, so I think we're better off. Senator Torres Ray, welcome to the committee. You have a mortgage lender services loss mitigation requirement bill, Senate File 1276. Welcome to the committee, Senator.
Thank you.
You may proceed. And
thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I know that you've met for long hours, so I very much appreciate, members, that you're giving me this opportunity. And before I start my presentation, Senator, I have, Mr. Chair, I have a couple of things I need to do. One, to put the bill in the shape that I needed for this hearing. I have an amendment. It's the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the amendment.
The A1 amendment, Senator Pappas will move it, then we'll explain it, I guess. On the A1 amendment, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members. And I also have some obsolete language that I need to delete to explain it, and so I need to strike out Section 3.
So moved.
One more paper.
Oh, yes, this is the dual path. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, move to strike Section 3 for the author's request.
Okay, on that striking section 3 at the author's request, Senator Pappas moves that. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, some members may be aware of the fact that this has been a very long journey for me, an intensive journey to come to a place where we can bring a number of advocates and organizations who are passionately involved with many people who have lost their homes to foreclosure, and many individuals who represent different industries who have been working really hard to address that issue. As you know, that is it's a significant issue. Many of us have seen these homes. Many of us have a relative who own a home that has been foreclosed. Many of us have friends who own homes that have been foreclosed. And so I think that many of us have had a personal connection with this issue in one way or another. I have a couple of handouts for you members, just to give you a sense of the magnitude of the problem for Minnesota. And it is, I think, very important that we review these numbers, because it is, when you really look at what these numbers represent, you kind of learn so many people are impacted, and yet we have not a clear sense of what that means. And what we hear, members, what we have heard in the last few weeks is that the number of Minnesota homes that have been lost to foreclosure has fallen to the lowest level since 2006. So one could think that, you know, we're doing a lot better, that the issue is getting addressed and that we don't have as many problems as we think that we used to have. But what we have, members, today is the number of foreclosures in 2012 was almost 18,000 homes. So I wanted to give you a perspective of what that means. That means the town of Hopkins, if you really want to think about what 18,000 homes means, is that the entire town of Hopkins will be empty. That all of the houses on Hopkins will be foreclosed. The town of Anoka, entire town of Anoka. Imagine San Michael, Hibbing. If you can put Marshall and Brainerd together, the entire town of Marshall and Brainerd, that's 17,000 people. Three towns combined, Crookston, Baxter, Orono. That's the magnitude of this problem, members. What we have before you is really an opportunity that actually was presented to me. These organizations that represent these families, attorneys who represent these families, came to us and say, you need to fix this. You need to come up with a solution for thousands of families. So we have before you a bill that attempts to provide some solutions. This is not a perfect bill. This is not a perfect solution. But with me, I have Mr. Ron Elwood, who has worked very diligently to bring two perspectives, senators, and I want you to know that this is an important message. The perspectives that we're trying to bring here are perspectives from people who have lost their homes, who are out there, who are homeless today, and the perspectives of technical people who really want to see this language working and make sure that this language actually matches some of the regulations that passed at the federal level. So I'm going to invite Mr. Elwood to walk through the bill. We will go through questions.
I welcome Mr. Elwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. And first thing I want to say, there are no chemicals involved in this bill.
You have a chance. You have a fighting chance.
And the second thing I'd like to do is sincerely express my gratitude to the Minnesota Bankers Association and the Minnesota Credit Union Network and the Minnesota State Bar Association, the Real Property Section in particular, for working so closely with us to give us very constructive suggestions on the language, part of which you see here, and frankly, part of which we're still working on, which we will be visiting if you give us the chance in Senator Latz's committee to tie it up in the bow that everybody needs. So we're still working, but the basic point of this bill is to really help those folks who actually have an opportunity to save their homes do so. And the most important thing is, you know, there's been a tremendous amount of activity on the federal level, on the national level with settlements between state attorneys general. The Office of Comptroller of the Currency has issued a series of or have entered into a series of consent judgments. So there is a lot of work already have been done putting in new requirements to help. And so one thing this bill does not do is add one single additional requirement on a lender or a servicer. There is absolutely not one new thing in this bill. Except for, I would draw your attention to page 2, line 13, which is essentially the guts of the bill. And what it basically says, and where I think this is the new part and which can really help, is it sets there in state laws, you can see there are four prerequisites to foreclose on a home. We are adding a fifth for mortgages that are already under some obligation through a national mortgage settlement, through the OCC rules, through existing statutes and rules, and potentially in future rules where the CFPB has issued rules that go into effect next year. So what this is the guts of the bill right here, and it simply says, it's three lines that says that you must fulfill the requirements that you're already under or adhere to the agreements you've already agreed to before you foreclose. It's pretty simple. It sounds kind of like innocuous, but it's really important because the one thing missing in all of this is the ability of the homeowner to self-enforce that, and that's what this provides. The rest of the bill, page 1, subdivision 1, obviously the definitions that put some meat on that, the requisites, and what referring to these settlements and existing settlements, existing rules. We're going to hone that a little bit more in the next committee from the comments we've heard. They're a little broad, and we want to make them more laser-like to refer to very specific agreements that we're referring to. We didn't have time to get that for today, but we'll have that for Senator Latz's committee if you give us the opportunity. And then the rest of the bill is kind of some cleanup. It is really section 2 of the bill. Existing notice in Minnesota law that provides advice to homeowners of how to reinstate their mortgage before the sale. Well, the existing law makes that notice go all the way to the redemption period, but once the house is sold, it's too late to reinstate. So all we're saying is you don't have to keep sending notices all the way to the end. Just send the notices only to where it matters. And the final section of the bill is one of those cleanup things where it would be on page 4, line 9, where we often refer to websites. And frankly, we checked. This website is no longer operative. So we figured we'd simplify it and just make it www.hud.gov. And if that goes away, I think we're all in trouble. So with that, we have something that I think can help homeowners without putting any additional onus on the banks. The amendment that is the A1 amendment, you know, the thing that has kind of created this a lot of energy around this issue this year is the issue of dual tracking, which I think most people understand it. It's essentially a practice that where if you're in the midst of a loan modification negotiation and while that's going on, you get the notice that your house is being sold. You know, people would feel that, well, you ought to finish the process, either get the modification or get the denial and have the appeal period completed before the foreclosure goes forward. And this is in the National Mortgage Settlement. It is in the new CFPB rules. And folks thought that it was pretty important that we have it in Minnesota law. It's really mirroring the federal rules, and the effective dates are all the same, so we're not actually moving up anything.
Mr. Elwood, is that January 1 of next year? Is that
for the most part, it is, but except for the where the dual tracking is already prohibited under existing settlement agreements, that would apply. But for the CFPB, the loans that would be governed by the CFPB rules, it would not take effect until January 10th. 2014. So in other words, we're not creating anything new again.
Okay.
And so with that, I think you've been here long enough and listened to me long enough, and I'm happy to answer some questions.
We never get enough of you, Mr.
Mr. Chairman.
I want to thank you folks for working this out. This is a pretty good start. I know there's probably more work to be done, but I think this is an effort that, Senator, you worked on diligently for quite a while, but Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Elwood, would you just repeat again the lines that you said were the guts of the bill? Because I was a little confused about whether we were working off the bill or the amendment.
Sorry.
On page 2.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, that is the original bill, and that is on page 2, line 13. And essentially it's requiring as a prerequisite for foreclosure the fulfillment of the existing obligations that are either under statute or rule or which have been agreed to under some existing consent agreement or the National Mortgage Settlement.
Okay. Yeah, further discussion on Senator Torres Ray's, what's the number, 11? 1276. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarifying question. I was trying to catch up when some of the testimony was going. You mentioned a number of these rules are already being enforced by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Is there a loophole that we're trying to fill? What are we missing here that's not already being covered by the CFPB or existing law out of the number of mortgage and foreclosure rules that we've already passed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, we're not creating any new rules. There's not a missing piece in a rule. The missing piece, which what this bill does, is give the ability to the homeowner to enforce those obligations. And so that is the key piece, which none of these settlements, none of the rules provide.
Senator Pratt, follow up.
It's my understanding that CFPB is all about providing consumers the tools to enforce the rules through the Consumer Financial Bureau's process. So why are we creating a separate track if everybody's already covered?
Should I answer that?
Senator.
Thank you. Senator Pratt, I need to answer that question because that has been the question that people ask. So I met with the Attorney General's office to ask the same question, and I was provided with the actual documents that came from the rules and the settlement, and I was given a pile of about this high. So when you think about one of your constituents tried to figure out, you know, what happened, basically, you could end up hiring an attorney and paying a lot of money to try to figure out something that it says here in three sentences. It's that simple. And so my reaction to the proposal before you was, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we have legislation that actually matches these rules that are this high and give that opportunity for a homeowner just to open a book here in Minnesota, open our regulations, and find this language. It makes it simpler, and it actually reinforces what has happened. So this is not new. there's not a loophole, and we are not adding, any language.
Let me just say that Senator Pratt and some others, that this has been worked on for about a solid month, and there's been a lot of effort put into it. I think we've got an agreement, I think. And Torres Ray would, quite frankly, I'd like to go a lot further, but she's worked with everybody and worked with all the players, so to speak, and we've come to an amicable kind of an agreement that, quite frankly, she doesn't get a full loaf of bread, but she's got a good start. She's got a half a loaf of bread, and sometimes we're better with a half a loaf of bread than nothing, right, Senator Pratt? So I think, personally, I'm in favor of this bill, and I think we should move forward.
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Pratt.
Thank you. I'm not trying to be disrespectful or argumentative.
No,
in any
we
way,
don't.
Just
we don't
trying
see
to
it that way.
Well, thank you, Senator Pratt. Mr. Chair, you're correct. As you know, I wanted a lot more, but I know that those of you who serve in education know very well too that I want to go really far in some of the proposals, but I want to also work in a bipartisan way, and I want to respect, the decisions of the committee. So, Senator Pratt, I wanted a lot more. I don't think that I could have met a deadline and be here before you without the support of many people in the industry. So this is, for me, this is a beginning. I'm going to continue this journey. But it's a beginning. I didn't want to close the door to this important issue.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, is there somebody from the bankers group here that want to speak on this?
Anybody come forward? Good evening. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Dames. We did work with Senator Torres Ray. We really appreciate her bringing us into this process. I'm sorry, I'm Tess Rice. I'm general counsel for the Minnesota Bankers Association. And we really appreciated the opportunity to work for Senator Torres Ray. She asked for our input from the beginning. And we've been working with her and legal aid and other stakeholders.
Senator Latz moves that Senate File 12-76 as amended with the dual tracking. Be recommended to pass, and I believe it goes to the Judiciary Committee. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator.
Okay, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Senator Eaton, are we? You're co-author of the bill. We've got an 11-page, the lead all amendment on the Eaton bill. That's the 466. I don't know. Somebody going to give us a description of the 11-page amendment?
Are you going to walk through it?
The bill. You,
so, Mr. Chair.
Senator Salka.
Before we get started, if this is substantive at 11 pages, should it not go back to the Committee of Jurisdiction? I mean, that's massive for a...
Yeah, where did it start?
Environment.
Yeah, I don't know.
Look at the size of it.
Mr. Chair.
When did that happen? I'm just, we're going to get into this, but it seems to me that this delete major amendment, we get it at
Mr. Chair.
20 minutes after the hour, and Senator Eaton.
Primarily, the changes were in consultation with the involved industries, and we tried to work with them and make the bill more palatable.
Okay.
And
well,
they aren't greatly changed. They're
we'll find out how that works a little later. Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, at some point, this does need to go back to Environment and Energy. We heard the original bill, but an 11-page amendment is pretty major, and that was the original committee, and I think it's very important, just like you would want if that happened in Commerce, I think it's very important we do that in Environment and Energy.
And then it would have to come back here.
And that's okay.
How about the timing of this thing? I agree with you. Are you moving? Is this thing moving? Legislation moving in the House. Do we have any more time over here? Does anybody know? That's a lot to bite off this late in the game. I just
little uncomfortable.
It needs to get through this week, Mr. Chair.
All right, continue on.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Shannon Lotthammer. I'm the director of the Environmental Analysis and Outcomes Division at the Pollution Control Agency. And the Pollution Control Agency, as well as the Department of Health and the Department of Commerce, who are also here if there are any questions, we're all very supportive of efforts to enhance the understanding of the presence of priority chemicals in children's products and to provide that information to Minnesotans so they can make informed choices about the products that they purchase and use. And toward that end, we worked with the author to work through the proposed amendment, which really goes towards focusing on the reporting of priority chemicals in children's products. This actually is very consistent with a report that the Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Health issued back in December 2010 under the original Toxic Free Kids Act. The first recommendation of that report was that the legislature consider actions to require manufacturers that produce or sell children's products in Minnesota that contain one or more priority chemicals to report information about any priority chemicals contained in those products. So just to walk you very briefly through the amendment, the proposal, again, focuses on the priority chemicals, on the reporting of that in children's products. That reporting is needed to help inform consumers so that they can avoid products that contain priority chemicals if they so choose. And you heard testimony about the interest in that previously. It's also needed to provide an incentive for manufacturers and distributors to reduce or phase out their use of priority chemicals and to select safer alternatives or an alternative product design. So the reporting itself begins with an initial notice, and that initial notice is proposed to come into play 1 year after enactment of the bill. And then more detailed reporting is phased in over time based on the size of the manufacturer or distributor of the children's product. The reporting is also coupled with a consumer education effort that would be led by the Department of Health and the Department of Commerce regarding the presence of priority chemicals in children's products. That speaks to getting information in the hands of consumers so that they can make that informed choice. The reporting requirements also ramp up over successive reporting periods to include the reporting of product UPC codes, and that's needed to make sure that we're getting quality information into the hands of consumers so they know which specific products have priority chemicals in them and how those priority chemicals are used in those products from the standpoint of the presence in the products so that, again, they can make that informed choice. Reporting fees also ramp up over time to provide further incentive to discontinue the use of priority chemicals and to fund, and this is a neat aspect of really reinvesting then in innovation. So any reporting fees that would be collected above what was needed to run the reporting effort would be fed back into competitive grants to really foster innovation and continue to look for alternatives to the use of priority chemicals and innovative approaches. At any time and with no fee and for any product which had an initial notification or reporting, a manufacturer or distributor could notify the agency that the use of that priority chemical has been phased out. And on that notification, then, no further reporting would be required and no fees would be collected for providing that information. And then the last feature that I just want to highlight of the proposed amendment is that it includes a report of the three agencies to the legislature on the implementation of these provisions of the proposed bill, and that would be required in November of 2015 and every 3 years thereafter. So that's the general overview of the provisions in the proposed amendment. I'd be happy to answer questions or include further details if the committee so chooses.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I just wanted to add that we did remove the requirement for a ban on the chemicals to compromise with the industry.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I understand that was an overview, but could you give me section by section the specifics of the changes in the amendment to the original bill?
Sure. Madam Chair and Senator, so walking through the bill then, the section-by-section changes in the proposed amendment is in the first section. So, well, actually, in Section 2, the definitions, there's the addition of the definition of contaminant, and that aligns with information that's being collected in other states, namely Washington, and it's also helpful to clarify for reporting if a chemical is present as a contaminant or as an important component of the particular chemical.
There's the added definition of product code, which then is used in the information about reporting, the ramp-up of the reporting requirements. Then additional changes are in Section 4, so starting on page 4. Line 4.28, there's a clarification added that retailers are exempt from the reporting requirement. The clarification that's added is except if a retailer is also a producer, manufacturer, importer, or domestic distributor of children's products. So trying to clarify the fact that retailers would be exempt except for if they are also operating as a manufacturer or distributor. Then in line 4.31, there is additional information added about the exception for pharmaceutical products, which also aligns with the definition in the state of Washington. On lines 5.9, there's an additional exception that's added for interactive software such as computer games, so reporting would not be required for those children's products. Line 5.16, reporting for batteries that are included in children's products would not be required. Then the next change in this amendment is Section 6 is a new section, and that section requires the initial notification after the first year. The earlier version of the bill required that the full reporting actually came in the first year for the largest companies. This actually requires just an initial notification to give companies a little bit more time to look at their products and do the investigation about the priority chemicals. It also establishes a baseline so that the state will have a better sense for how many companies are actually removing the use of priority chemicals before reporting is even required. So it gives us that useful information to help report on the discontinued use of those chemicals. Then Section 7 actually has some changes, most notably in line 7.5, where the timeline where the full reporting first kicks in is amended from July 1st of 2014 to July 1st of 2015. That's for the largest companies, and then the reporting is staggered in based on company size. So the timing of those reporting requirements are then also moved in Section 7.8, or line 7.8, 7.11, 14, and 17. So an additional year is added in before the reporting requirements come into play. Then the next change in the amendment from the earlier version of the bill is in line 8.2 on page 8. That's in Section 8. That actually requires a description of the function of the priority chemical in the product, including whether it's present as a contaminant, to again provide that information to consumers. That also aligns with information from Washington. One of the things that we've heard through the testimony is that there's an interest in making this bill as consistent with the reporting requirements in another state, which is the state of Washington. So we've looked to do that wherever we can, but still meeting the overall goal of informing consumers. Then in lines 8.2 and 8.22 to 8.24, there's clarity added that the reporting or the information is required for a manufacturer or for a distributor or a trade association, so whichever entity is actually doing the reporting. And then line 8.25, that clause also provides for trade associations to actually do the reporting on behalf of their member organizations. So we added that in to have that option for efficiency on the part of manufacturers and distributors. Then the next change is on page 9, line 9.10. That was changed in Clause E. It was changed from the department, meaning the Department of Health, to agency, meaning the Pollution Control Agency, because the reporting function is really would be housed in the Pollution Control Agency. So we suggested that change to make that clear. Then in line 9.13, that Clause F, that was proposed to be added as an efficiency measure that if the reporting party determines that there has been no change since the last time a report was provided, that they could send that information or make that notification to the agency and they wouldn't have to report the same information over and over again if nothing has changed. And then in line 9.21 and 9.22, there was clarity provided to the trade secret provisions in order to match the provisions in Section 116.9403. So just making sure that the language matches up. Then Section 9 is a new section. So the intent of that overall section is to ramp up the reporting requirements in successive two-year reports to provide an incentive to discontinue priority chemical use. This also provides then the education components that the Department of Health and Department of Commerce would be implementing. And it also provides for the ramp-up of fees if a priority chemical continues to be used, again, to provide that incentive to discontinue its use and also to provide funding to fund competitive grants for innovative practices. Then the next change then is in Section 10 in line 10.26 and 10.27. There was a definition of report added there to clarify that for the purposes of the fees, that a report means each instance of a priority chemical being present in a children's product. And that was a clarification to make sure that there was clarity about how the fees would be collected. And then finally, in Section 13, line 11.10, the timing for the actual report from the agencies to the legislature was slightly adjusted to be on November 15th of 2015 in order to provide enough time for data to start to come in so that we would have something meaningful to report rather than the original language was January 15th of 2015, and then every 3 years thereafter rather than every 2 years thereafter, again, so that there was enough new information that it would be worthwhile for the legislature to receive that report and there'd be something new to learn about.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair and Senator Eaton, or your witness, I'm sorry I didn't get your name.
I'm Shannon Lotthammer.
Loghammer?
Lotthammer, L-O-T-T-E.
Lotthammer,
yep.
And from the Department of Health, did you? PCA.
PCA.
Ms. Lotthammer. I think that since you've already been through three committees, members are somewhat concerned about a delete everything amendment. And could you kind of explain that really is why we're having a delete everything amendment now? And I know you went through some of the changes. But is this, you know, are you in negotiation or what are the circumstances under which we are having a delete all amendment?
Ms. Lotta.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. The reason for the delete everything amendment was really to provide clarity of what the changes were from the standpoint of there were whole sections that we proposed or that are being proposed to be removed, and those are the sections that have to do with the ban and also the sections that are associated with that, so exposure assessment and then also a waiver process for companies to make application for a waiver from the product, the prohibition of sale or ban. So in order to try to provide additional clarity for considering this proposed amendment, it was done as a delete everything amendment.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
So, Madam Chair, this is because you made some significant changes to make this process easier for companies to comply with?
This is Lotthammer.
Madam Chair and Senators, yes, that's correct.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate, Senator Pappas, your questioning on that. But, Senator Eaton, Ms. Lotthammer, page by page, described numerous changes on almost every page from what was presented to us in the Environment and Energy Committee. Can you tell me why you wouldn't want this bill to go back to the Committee of Origin where we first heard it when it's basically a different bill from what we heard?
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Brown, really the only real major change other than technical stuff is that we no longer are requiring a ban. Instead, we're requiring a progressive form of reporting. It's the same chemicals, the same reasoning, and the same process. It's just that through negotiations with industry, we made some adjustments to try and make it more palpable.
Senator Brown.
Madam Chair, Senator Eaton, I understand that, but it took almost 10 minutes to explain all the changes. I find it hard to accept that they aren't major changes.
Senator Eaton, you want to respond?
Madam Chair, I'll let her respond.
Well, okay, Ms. Lotthammer.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I think that was maybe my fault in my attempt to be very thorough. Many of the things that I explained were fairly simple changes just to clarify definitions or to point out the ramp up of the reporting, but I, you know, certainly am supportive of the way that Senator Eaton characterized the changes to the bill, it was really about removing the ban aspect and including some additional information that really was enhancing what was already included in the bill, just to continue along the lines of that element of enhancing the information that's provided to consumers. And that was something that the agency testified on throughout the committee process. It's something that we've been very supportive of throughout the process.
Senator Latz, did you have a question?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair?
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Eaton, because this bill has rulemaking, it will have to go to my committee, but we are meeting on Friday, so I think we'll be able to report the bill out if it passes here, and then it would be referred to state and local government, and we can put it on the agenda on Friday.
Madam Chair? Senator Brown.
Did you?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Lothammer, can you I asked for explanation earlier, and I'm not comfortable with that explanation, but Section 3, the identification of priority chemicals, can you explain to me why the language changed there?
Senator Eaton. Or Mrs. Lothammer. The amendment. Identify yourself for the tape.
For the record, Dan Andreessen with the Healthy Legacy Coalition. Madam Chair, Senator Brown. Again, this was just a clarifying change to make sure that we're addressing chemicals that are being no longer in high production volume, but still persistent in the environment and causing potentially public health concerns.
And Madam Senator Chair, Brown. I understood your explanation the last time I asked, but I'm not – I shouldn't say understood it. I just don't agree with that. I don't understand why we're changing from and to or – because my interpretation of that is it's opening the door to these 1,756 chemicals that are on the high priority list. And I think that opens the door much wider than what you're saying this bill is about for just 9 chemicals in children's products. So I'm not understanding why we're making that word change. And I'd like a better explanation of that.
Senator Eaton?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown. Essentially, I guess you're right in the fact that if one of these chemicals starts to become prominent in children's products and is causing problems, we want the Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Health and the Department of Commerce to be able to add them to the monitoring process. But our bill only addresses these 9.
Senator Brown.
Well, Madam Chair, if that's the case, then I'd like to offer the A4 amendment. And I'll need to change the wording in it since we have the delete all amendment.
Senator Brown offers the A4 amendment.
And Madam Chair, I would. Well, wait till.
Modify it because it's okay. Amendment to the delete all amendment. Oh, that's true. That's true.
What? I don't believe that we've adopted the
delete
all amendment.
Then I'll wait, Madam
Chair,
I'll wait.
I'll move the delete all amendment.
Senator Pappas moves the delete all amendment.
A13.
0255. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no.
No.
Motion prevails. Senator Brown.
Madam Chair, the A4 amendment, and counsel can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would change the wording to page 3, lines 3.33 through page 4, lines 1 through 6, reinstate the stricken language and delete the new language.
Madam Chair, I believe that's a correct conforming the amendment to the delete all instead of the engrossment that came in here today.
Okay. Can you repeat it? I don't get it.
Oh, yes, I can repeat it.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A4 amendment would read page 3, lines 3.33 through page 4, lines 1 to 6.
Page 4, lines 1 through 6.
1 through 6.
Any discussion on the amendment?
I don't understand what he's doing. Can you explain it?
I'm removing the word change opens the door to another 1,756 chemicals. This is being promoted as a bill that's focused on 9 chemicals, but with this word change, it opens the door to much broader than just nine chemicals. It's opening the door to another 1,756 chemicals. And deleting this language will focus this bill on the nine chemicals that it says it's about.
Senator Pappas?
How does it do that?
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, I'd be happy to answer that question.
All right. Senator Brown.
If you look at page 3, line 3.33, it removes the word and. Mm-hmm. Currently in statute, it has to meet this criteria and this criteria. This language change changes it to it has to meet this criteria or this criteria.
Senator Pappas? Any further discussion on the amendment?
Could we hear from the person from PCA, please, and the
is
author?
Is someone from PCA?
She's there.
Oh, Mrs. Lothammer. Would you care to? Our Senator Eaton?
Madam Chair, I would ask the committee to vote against this. I understand there's some conflict.
Mrs. Lothammer?
Madam Chair, and members of the committee, this provision actually is pointing towards the Department of Health. So it's the Department of Health's responsibility to actually designate the priority chemicals. So that's why I'm hesitating to comment on that. I think that it's a matter for the committee to discuss or potentially the Department of Health to answer questions.
Senator Latz.
How many chemicals are on the priority chemical list right now today?
Pardon me?
How many chemicals are on the priority chemical list right now?
Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, 9.
Okay, Madam Chair. And so there is a process already in statute by which additional priority chemicals can be designated by the Department of Health. Is that correct?
Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, yes, that's correct, regardless of this amendment.
Okay, and
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, and this bill is designed to incent a phase out of whatever chemicals are on that list of priority chemicals. Today it's 9, tomorrow it might be 10. If the Department of Health goes through its process and determines an additional chemical should be on that list. Is that right?
Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, that's correct.
So in a sense, Senator Brown's conclusion that the door is open to all of the chemicals the Department of Health monitors is correct in that if they were to go through the process and decide all 1,000 or so chemicals were priority chemicals, then this bill would apply to create incentives to phase them out. Is that correct?
Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, yes.
Now,
Senator Latz.
Now for me, Madam Chair, the question is that a problem?
Senator Eaton.
And I guess I'm going to answer my own
okay,
question.
Okay, Senator Latz.
I mean, if current law already establishes a mechanism that the legislature and the governor, in all of our wisdoms, have concluded is appropriate for the Department of Health to determine priority chemicals, then I'm comfortable relying upon that mechanism. And if once that determination is made, if this bill goes forward, then there will be incentives to phase those chemicals out. That will be one of the consequences of being designated a priority chemical. And I don't see a problem with that. Now, if we want to change that process by which the Department of Health will make those designations, that's a slightly different question. I understand it will affect the impact of this legislation, but I think that process is a slightly different question, and we should bifurcate the two, if you will.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd also like to mention that included in here is a education piece from the Department of Health on these chemicals to the public.
Senator Brown.
So thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Latz, I'm not clear if you're supporting my amendment or against it.
Senator Brown, I'm not
Senator
sure.
Latz.
I'm trying to understand its impact.
Well,
Senator Brown?
Madam Chair, we're talking about two different things. There's priority chemicals, which are the nine that this bill addresses, and there's also the chemicals of high concern. And this bill will change the process by which we deal with the chemicals of high concern. There is statute now that if they meet this criteria and this criteria, this bill will change that process, as you described. I don't feel we need to change that process, but this bill in Section 3 will, to change it to this, use these criteria or these criteria. And that's what I'm concerned about.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could counsel bring us some clarification on this discussion?
Absolutely. Senate counsel, do you have some advice?
Madam Chair, it does seem to me that something that required it to have been both identified as a high production volume chemical by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and meeting the criteria, that you no longer, I think Senator Brown is correct in his analysis, mm-hmm. that more chemicals can potentially be designated than prior to this.
Thank you, Senate bill. Counsel.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What are they called? The priorities? High concern chemicals are finite number. They're the ones listed. So some of those could move over to the priority chemicals, which can happen regardless of this language. But there could never be. I mean, there isn't any other ones.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Senator Brown?
Madam Chair, well, Senator Eaton, to your own words, if it can happen regardless, then why do we need to make the change?
Senator Eaton, or a testifier, that's fine.
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, I'd go back to my example of PFCs that are currently being phased out of many products because of known toxicity and probably may not be high production volume. Mercury is probably one of them as well. However, they're still showing up maybe in some products. They're still showing up in the environment. They're still showing up in human tissue. We just want to make sure the Department of Health is able to capture those type of chemicals that pose public health concerns.
Senator
So, Madam Senator Chair, then we are changing the current procedure as to how things are happening with this change in Section 3.
Mr. Andreessen?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown is correct.
Thank you.
Senator Latz?
Yes, I think it is changing the criteria for moving a chemical from high concern to priority chemical list. And is what you're saying, sir, then the goal is to allow the designation of low production volume chemicals that may meet some of these other criteria instead to be designated as chemicals of priority chemicals? Is that
Mr.
what
Andreessen?
You're referring to?
Madam Chair, Senator Lentz, it's just to allow the Department of Health to take that into account.
Senator Pappas. I'm sorry. Senator Latz.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I mean, the way the delete everything amendment is worded, simply the fact that it's a high production volume chemical would alone be sufficient basis for changing the designation from a high concern chemical to a priority chemical. That clause would stand alone, as Senator Brown has indicated, with the or that's found at the end of line 4.4. So just its volume of production would allow the Department of Health to declare it a priority chemical. And I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that. Maybe I'm not on the Health Committee, and so I'm not quite as familiar with all of this stuff. But I guess I'll pose that question. Is it your intent to allow just the fact that a chemical of high concern is also a chemical with a high production volume, should that be sufficient to make it a priority chemical, or should it be paired also with any of the criteria contained in what you're relabeling as paragraphs 2, 3, and 4?
Mr. Andreessen.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, the idea is that for a priority chemical to become designated such from a high concern list, it has to be found in human tissue, the environment, so forth. And so that was the intent of the legislation that was passed in 2009.
So, Madam Chair?
Senator Latz.
What's the purpose of having a production volume criterion at all?
Okay. Mr. Andreessen.
Take out clause one.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, I think it was just to address chemicals that are known to be toxic but also being in the marketplace in high volume.
Okay, so Madam Chair.
Senator Latz.
So the idea is not to deal, the original idea was not to deal with those low volume production chemicals because they're not as large a threat, but now you're just by virtue of their smaller quantities, but now you're saying there are some that even in small quantities ought to be possible to designate them as priority chemicals. But it looks to me like the way your bill is worded doesn't quite capture what you're trying to do without opening the door wide open. And Senator Brown is trying to close the door completely, which I'm not sure I'm comfortable with either. It seems to me you need to rewrite the section to, you know, maybe make some designation that there are certain kinds of low-level production, low-volume production chemicals that because of their other impact, the Department of Health could designate as priority chemicals.
Mr. Andreessen? Or Senator Eaton?
Madam Chair?
Madam Chair, could I maybe help?
Senator Pappas?
I don't know if this is true, but it's possible that how the U.S. EPA defines high production volume chemical might be relevant here, because I think they're probably not talking about just any high volume chemical. They're talking about a type of chemical that they've identified to be problematic to the environment. So that would just be one category, is a category already identified by the U.S. EPA. Then the next category is the biomonitoring to be present in human blood, or the next category, it's a chemical that's found in household dust. We're assuming that all these chemicals have some kind of negative impact, and I think that negative impact isn't kind of defined here. Possibly it's defined somewhere else. Okay, that's my one comment. My second comment is, Senator Brown, you were so concerned about us making this change from what the Environment Committee approved. This language in the delete all is identical to the original language that was approved by the Environment Committee. So you yourself are proposing an amendment that would change that language from what you already approved in the Environment Committee.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, I voted against it in the Environment Committee, but I didn't say that this language has changed. There is a great deal of language that has changed in this delete all amendment from what we heard in the Environment Committee. But no, this Section 3 did not change from what we heard in Environment Committee. A great deal of the bill did change from what we heard in Environment Committee.
Senator Gazelka.
Madam Chair, I'm going to make a motion that we move this back to the Committee of Jurisdiction without recommendation. There is a ton of work that needs to be done on this because it's basically a brand new bill. I really don't know where industry is on that. I just have where they're coming from. But even if they made comments, this is a brand new bill. And so I make that motion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
I believe that's still a debatable motion. I would oppose that motion. I mean, it's true that this is a complex bill, but it's already been through three committees. The witnesses have already testified that she kind of over-explained the bill and that there wasn't that great deal of changes. The changes were made in response to industry's concerns, which often happens in the Commerce Committee. And if there are any other tweaking that needs to be done in the bill, it still needs to go to state and local government and it still needs to go to finance. So, I mean, sometimes we have to deal with complicated bills, and this has been reviewed by three other committees. It seems to me, unless we have a lot of testifiers in opposition, which I don't know. I mean, I don't
you
know.
You haven't even asked for testimony.
Nobody has asked to testify.
We haven't asked for it.
I don't know if anyone
yet.
Has signed up to testify in opposition. That's my question.
There are people in opposition.
I just think we need to keep the bill moving.
Senator Brown.
Madam Chair, my A4 amendment is still on the table to be voted on.
Is mine a higher motion?
Well, let's look at the A4 amendment first.
Which one's the higher motion?
I think Senator Gazelka's is.
The motion to table is a higher motion.
It's not a table. It's a motion to send the bill out.
It's a motion.
I like what Stank said.
The chair could use some advice.
Senate counsel? I don't know the answer to that. I'm trying to think it through. Senator Gazelka's motion is to move the bill out of committee and re-refer it back to the Environment Committee. Is that?
Yeah.
I think we probably have to deal with the amendment on the table first.
On the A4 amendment, we're going to deal with the A4 amendment.
And I'd like a roll call.
Roll call has been asked for. It will be given. Take the roll.
Brown.
Yes.
Carlson.
No.
Dahl.
No.
James.
Yes.
Elka.
Yes.
Goodwin.
Housley. Yes.
Jensen.
Yes.
Latz.
No.
Pattis.
No.
Pratt.
Yes.
Reiner.
No.
Six to five, motion carries. Now, to the motion, Gazelka's motion.
Yeah, and just final comments on that. I marked all the pages in the bill that were all brand new, and I think Senator Brown's was about the only one that wasn't, and now that's changed too. But, so I just think it doesn't, I think this is a project for the interim. I think we're at this late date. I don't think... I recognize that she may not have the time, but it's a massive change here, and I just think it should go back to the Committee of Jurisdiction.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I move to amend the Gazelka motion to send the bill to state and local government without recommendation. So we have to vote on that first, and then vote on Gazelka.
Any discussion on the amendment to the motion?
Well, Madam Chair, I would oppose that because, in effect, we're moving it forward when we should not be doing that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Brown.
Again, this is a different bill than what we heard in the original committee, and it needs to go back to the original committee for us to hear. There's 11. It's a delete all amendment, and changes, numerous changes on almost every page of the bill. It needs to go back to the original committee.
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, I think too much stock is being put in the fact that this is a delete-all amendment. When I'm amending a bill, I kind of rely on counsel to tell me, is it easier and for people to understand what's being done to do it as a delete-all, or is it easier to do a page-and-line version? Counsel could easily put together a page-and-line version of the amendment, and we'd be sitting here and working our way through that, having a harder time understanding what it does. We wouldn't be banding about this idea of a delete-all amendment and how horrible that is. So I think it's at the term aside, and just look at the whatever the substance of the changes are and whether that alone needs to be re-reviewed by the Committee of Origination.
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call on my amendment.
On Pappas's
my motion.
Amendment to the motion. We'll have a roll call. Take the roll.
No. May I speak still?
I'm sorry. Yes, Senator Gazelka.
Okay. I'm just wondering, they implied that they worked with the industry on this and that this brand-new delete-all was coming together, and we haven't heard from any industry people verifying that that was true.
That's correct.
You made your motion.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Latz.
Senator Gazelka made a motion even after we were informed that there were some industry people that may want to be heard on the bill in an attempt to truncate the hearing process here tonight. Now, I understand a desire to get out of here, but I'd rather do the bill right one way or the other and be fully informed. And so I think I would ask if Senator Gazelka might simply withdraw the motion and we can hear from the parties that have an interest in this and see what the industry has to say.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, for the sake of being reasonable, I will withdraw my amendment.
Motion's been withdrawn. Are there people in that want to testify on this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tony Quillis again from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I think...
Madam Chair, just so we're
Senator
correct...
Senator Pappas?
...correct with procedures, Senator Reinert, my parliamentarian, has been consulting with me, and I think the correct activity is for me to withdraw my amendment to the amendment first, which I will do, and then Senator Gazalka can withdraw his. So I'll withdraw the amendment to the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Reinert,
for bringing that to
our attention and for you to withdraw your motion. I believe all motions now have been withdrawn, and we will continue with the testimony.
Madam Chair, thank you again. I'm Tony Colas from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. To Senator Latz's point, yes, I want to get it right. I was first informed of this delete everything, and you are correct. There are times we could do section in line, and it would be very confusing in going through. But the first time I was informed that there was going to be some changes were last night. Late, and then we saw this amendment this morning was emailed to us, or this afternoon, excuse me, about 3:36. We saw the paper copies. As you saw, there was a little bit of confusion on trying to get them through. I'm still trying to process this, Mr. Chair or Madam Chair, and what we're trying to do is avoid conflicting and confusing and costly regulations on manufacturers and retailers on this state. You've heard references to Washington. My first perusal through here is this goes a little bit further than that, and I'll give you one industry example. The toy industry alone in Washington, it cost them $27 million the first year to test their products to go through, and it's estimated to be $67 million in the out years for them to test their products. This deals with all the retailers and manufacturers in the state of Minnesota. I'd like to get it right. I don't want to do it. I understand it's committee deadlines, and we're going through, and we're trying to move it through. And there's three legs to this stool. There was the business community and the industry. There's the state agencies and the proponents. We've been working very closely with all of them. But there was a delete everything amendment proposed by the state agencies late into this game. And Mr. Chairman, again, Madam Chair, we're dealing with retailers and manufacturers. Think of Target in this state. Think of the products that are in that store. I want to get it right, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
I would like to remind the committee that Washington tests 36 chemicals. We are talking 9. And the products in Target would not be responsible for testing them. The manufacturers would.
Are there any questions or comments from the committee of the testimony? Are there others that want to testify on this bill? State your name for the record.
My name is Sarah Brezina. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm with the American Chemistry Council in Washington, D.C. We represent the leading chemical companies in the U.S., and we actually came prepared to talk about the earlier version of this bill. I had not seen this bill at all until just now. When it was passed around. I really came because I work on children's health and chemical regulatory issues in D.C. and wanted to convey my understanding for you all's understanding about how the issues you're dealing with are being dealt with right now by EPA. If you're concerned about getting this done quickly, EPA is moving in a lot of these areas right now as we speak. They've just issued information on uses of chemicals from manufacturers. This has all been reported on a website. You need to look at that information. They reported there for the first time about chemicals used in children's products. Very important information, I think, for you all to look at. They've recently prioritized chemicals for assessment. And they have a very rigorous process for really figuring out what chemicals in all sorts of uses, not just children's products, but all sorts of uses, should be the priority ones that they ought to look at. They've identified 83 chemicals for assessment, and right now we're commenting on those assessments, very solid assessments of chemicals that are of interest to the EPA and interest to Minnesota. When EPA finishes these assessments, they're going to decide what to do about them. Do these chemicals need to be phased out? Are alternatives needed? Or are other risk management measures needed? Do they need labeling requirements? Are certain minor or some uses but not other uses within a category in need of some specific regulation? They're not just going to identifying chemicals and phasing out those chemicals. So it's interesting, the approach you all are taking is sort of prioritize chemicals for phase out. EPA says, first, let's see where the chemicals used in commerce. Let's prioritize chemicals for further assessment and really conduct an assessment of the hazards and exposures that they may present. What are the real risks from those chemicals? And this applies not just to, you know, industrial chemicals, but to chemicals in commercial uses and in consumer uses, including children's products. So I guess what I'd like to say is, you know, what you all did, at least in the earlier draft, recognized, you know, some of the elements of what EPA is doing, but not quite the same, I would say, rigor of science that EPA is applying. A comment was made earlier that the whole chemical regulatory improvement process is stagnating in Washington. I would disagree with that. Over the last 2 years, EPA has said we're not waiting for changes to the law. We are going to up our game and try to address chemicals regulation and improve what we're doing. And they're doing that in large measure because of issues that have been raised about chemicals in children's products. My industry wants to make sure that chemicals are safe for their intended uses, no matter what uses those are. We want improvements in the regulatory process. We want EPA to do a better job at making sure that chemicals are being used appropriately. So I guess what I would suggest is, as you consider this most recent amendment, if you're concerned that you have to act now, I don't think you need to. I think you can, you know, understand EPA is going down this process right now. They're working through a list of 83 chemicals, and they're going to have some answers on those and be making some tough regulatory decisions over the next year on this first clump of chemicals and continue forward on that. So I'll end there, and if anyone
Thank
has
you.
Any questions.
Does anyone have any questions for Mrs.
Brusina?
Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I'd just like to point out that the state of Minnesota, as usual, is ahead of the game, and we've already done this assessment, and that's the report that the Department of Health and the Pollution Control Agency put out, and this is the recommendation on how to carry forward from that report from the 2009 Original Toxic Free Kids Act. So I can understand why the chemical industry wouldn't want us to pursue this, but I think it's important for the state and our children.
Thank you. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that Senate File 466 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the State and Local Government Committee. And I'd like a roll call.
On that motion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelle.
Yeah, I would have preferred to lay it over rather than to kill it, but I think, you know, based on all the things we talked about, that it is a completely different bill. We now have heard from industry both saying that one, that they didn't get it, the other one that got it at 3 o'clock today. That is not how we build consensus here. We heard the chamber talk about trying to find a way through and willing to find a way through, but you know, it doesn't hurt for this to take a little bit longer to get it right. So I'll definitely be a no now.
We'll take the roll.
Metzen.
No.
Brown.
No.
Carlson.
Yes.
Dahl.
Yes.
James.
No.
Zelka.
No.
Goodwin.
Yes.
Housley.
No.
Jensen.
No.
Latz.
No.
Pappas.
Yes.
Pratt.
No.
Reiner.
Yes.
On a vote 5-8, the motion does not prevail. One more bill. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also have an amendment for this one.
Okay.
The A5.
The A5 amendment? Senator Eaton, is it the A5 amendment?
Yes,
that's correct. Do you want to explain the amendment? Is this it?
No problem.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Eaton.
I would like him to explain the amendment.
Okay, state your name for the record.
For the record, my name is Garth Hickel. I'm with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and this is an agency initiative. The amendment essentially delays implementation of the carpet stewardship plan for the non-metropolitan area, the 7-county metropolitan area, for 1 year. So the plan for the metropolitan area would be implemented in 2015. That would then expand to outside of the 7-county metropolitan area starting July 1st, 2016.
Madam Chair, I'll offer that amendment.
Senator Goodwin offers the A5 amendment. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is intended to achieve three objectives: the environmental benefits from increasing collection of problem materials and recycling valuable resources. It's also for engaging manufacturers and consumers in the managing products at the end of life. It moves finances from solely local government-funded programs. It also supports the economic development and job creation in Minnesota, particularly for paint and carpet with existing recycling facilities. We need this legislation to ensure a level playing field so that all the manufacturers are participating. It allows the manufacturers to work together to design and manage the programs and provide accountability. Currently, we are paying for these products anyway through our county property taxes. This would move it to kind of a user fee for those of us who paint our house. We would pay the fee on the paint rather than everybody in the county paying to have that excess paint taken care of. This does build off the experience with other product stewardship programs in the state. Manufacturers are responsible for designing, managing, and financing these programs, and there are requirements for adequate collection and performance goals, but those are determined in those plans. The PCA approves the stewardship plans and provides oversight and enforcement if necessary.
Any further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Goodwin.
I have one more amendment, the A4 amendment. And this, I guess we better wait until this passes.
You could start explaining it, I guess.
Okay. This just exempts medical devices from the battery part of Senator Eaton's bill, and she has agreed to do that for the medical industry.
Mr. Chair, I would consider that a friendly amendment.
Okay. On the A4 Goodwin Amendment, further discussion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Okay, we're back to the Senator Kosofka.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's anyone here to talk about Section 2, the carpet section. I know that that's, when I was listening to people coming into my office, that seemed to be the area of most conflict. And so if there's somebody that would testify related to that, if not, then I'll move forward with an amendment. But I don't know who's here still.
Is there somebody I wish to wave? Yes, sit down and state your name for the record.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Mendez. I'm the Vice President of Government Relations for the Carpet and Rug Institute. We're the trade association that represents the manufacturers in the United States. 97% of what you walk on in the United States is made here, and we're very proud of that. And we are opposed to this bill. We as an industry, don't feel that we're ready for this to happen yet. We have our own. There is a voluntary program associated with carpet recycling. It's called the Carpet America Recovery Effort. And it's not making the strides that we had hoped it would make when it was initially implemented, but it is making progress and getting, it's to date had over 2 billion pounds of carpet diverted from landfill. So we would ask that the committee strike the carpet portion from the bill. Carpet is a product that can't be compared to paint and batteries. It's very different. It's large, but it's not hazardous. And so we are opposed to this bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir. Would you wish to comment?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, from the agency's perspective, we'd just like to respond to that. While, you know, we certainly recognize the work of the voluntary program, actually the state of Minnesota was one of the founders of the initiative that resulted in that program. We were heavily engaged in that for 10 years and actually sat on the board of directors, but we really found that the actual benefits specifically for Minnesota as a result of that agreement were far less than what we had hoped. The agency estimates that there's about 86,000 tons of carpet being disposed annually, and our recycling rate is less than 8%, which clearly for us signifies that we need to move in a different direction. In terms of trying to take advantage of the economic opportunities associated with carpet recycling. The agency has proposed two amendments to the bill, including the one before you right now, to try to address some of the specific concerns that the carpet industry has offered throughout the process.
Which amendment are you talking? You're not agreeing with
the bill, I think.
Senator Kosofka.
No.
Okay.
No, Mr. Chair.
The amendment before us, I was a little confused.
Well, the one that expands the timeline to July of 2016.
Oh, okay. I was out of the room for a little bit. Yeah. Senator Kosofka.
Well, Mr. Chair, for the sake of time, I'll get right to it. I'd like to make an oral amendment that we delete Section 2 of the bill.
That's the pertains to the carpeting.
Yeah.
Only.
I just don't think that portion of the bill is ready for prime time.
Any further discussion on the Kosofka motion? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd oppose this amendment because it sounds like the industry has had plenty of time to find alternatives and to work on a voluntary program, and it just isn't anywhere near accomplished enough in the 10 years or so that it's been around. So I think perhaps time to put a little pressure on.
Further discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Oh. Motion prevails. Further discussion? So, on the bill, as amended. Further discussion on the bill as amended. Senator Carlson, would you, somebody want to, or Senator Goodwin, somebody want to move the bill, or?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill.
It goes to the Finance Committee after this, Senator.
Move the bill as amended.
As amended. Senator Carlson moves the Senate File 639 as amended, recommended to pass and forward to the Finance Committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
No. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Eaton, and thank you.
Thank you, Committee. Thank you, Mr.
Monday,
Chair.
Monday, Monday. Next Monday at noon. We had a good
day. Yep. Yeah. I figured you did okay.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Cool. How many years are you doing? Remember that. Get it
done.
Okay.